Hello, everybody. Welcome to another week of The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar. Hello, Jay.
Hello, Dave. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm watching you and I'm laughing. You're struggling with your headphones.
Little technical problem here, but I'm okay now.
What's going on? Are they too tight for you or something?
No, the other ones I can only hear out of one ear, and I'm confused enough as it is, I don't need to, yeah.
Welcome to the headphone situation.
Thank you. Yeah, my headphones are in stereo now, so I can survive. I can get on with the night.
I think you'll do just fine.
Thank you, sir.
Good week?
Yeah, busy week, but otherwise, yeah, very good.
Good.
Yeah, you?
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, you were gone for the weekend.
I was in beautiful Toronto, and had myself a hell of a time.
Good.
Best rock concert I've ever seen, which says a lot, because I see a lot of
them. Best rock concert you've ever seen?
Yeah.
And this is not a Tragically Hip concert?
No, there were two members of the Hip that played at the show.
Ah.
But no, it was a benefit concert for the Juno Awards and something called Music Counts, which is to raise money for people who can't afford music instruments. I think it's for kids. Anyway, this was the best damn show I've ever seen, Jay. It was incredible. There were over 40 artists on stage throughout the night, three house bands, the Order of Good Cheer, the Beauties, and Arkells. Was invited down by Nick from Arkells, and I want to thank Nick Dyka again. Nick was, of course, a guest on our Simpsons tribute show.
Yes, he was.
And added our rock cred so that we didn't seem like total geeks during our Simpsons tribute.
Yeah.
That or we dragged him down with us. I'm not sure which one.
We might have.
The show was wonderful. And funnily enough, about the only thing it was missing was the guest that we have on tonight, who is Dave Bedini. And I'm very excited to talk a little rock and roll and a little sports with the guy who on Twitter you can follow under the name Hockey-esque. Dave also has a weekly column in the National Post. He's got a new book that came out in October called Writing Gordon Lightfoot. Fantastic read. I read it yesterday, cover to cover. Was up till 4:30 in the morning reading it. Could not put it down. And a new rock record. The Bedini Band in the Rock Hall will be giving away a copy of the CD tonight. Here it is.
you just hit it pretty hard there.
It's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
It's okay. I didn't even remove the plastic.
You might have shattered the CD inside.
No. Come now.
No,
come on.
Okay.
Please.
All right.
So, yeah, I'm on this wonderful music high. I watched the hockey game, watched the third period from the Horseshoe Tavern.
And just busted up your high right after that, right?
Well, I kind of felt like...
Talk about a crash.
It was weird, Jay, to sit in this, landmark Toronto bar quietly rooting for the Habs while that hockey game was on. I was still at the hotel when I saw Don Cherry speak.
Okay.
Wow. You catch any of that?
Yes, I did. I did. I was watching it, and yeah. It's pretty much, it is what it is. Usually, we'll keep it on CBC at the pub on Saturday nights, because we get a lot of the guys coming in. And
you'll
stuff.
Keep the volume up for Coach's Corner during intermission?
I usually don't.
Okay.
But at that point, I was really busy, so I didn't get a chance to lower it. And he spoke, and I'm glad I listened.
Well.
Or not so glad.
It was pretty intense. I got to say, it was pretty intense. The first, the calling out Brian Burke. And second, the whole xenophobic pro-Ontario rant.
Yeah. I mean, like so many have said, we're very familiar with that here.
It was
in this province.
Same damn conversation you hear.
Exactly the same. Exactly. It's completely senseless, dude. It makes no sense whatsoever.
We need more British Columbians on the Canucks. This is the problem. No.
No.
Ridiculous. Yeah, Jerome Iginla happens to be from the province of Alberta, and that's why he plays so much harder for the Flames. No. He's from Edmonton. I'm sure he grew up hating the Flames.
It just... I mean, there's when somebody's time has come, it has come. And it doesn't even make any sense to me anymore. I'm sitting there and I'm looking at him and I'm saying, okay, he's kidding, right? Is he joking? Or, oh no, he's 100% serious right now. He actually thinks, like he says this with conviction.
Oh yeah.
Like this is actually a fact that if teams had more players from Ontario on them, or at least the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Just the Maple Leafs. Idea, the quote that really got me was that when the Canadians lose, the Toronto Maple Leafs cheer. And the idea that when Wilson was the coach and Burke was the general manager, these were the two guys that ran the USA hockey program. So they are somehow almost conniving together, to conspiring together against the Maple Leafs.
Well, that's clearly it, isn't it?
Ridiculousness. Ridiculousness. Don Cherry, I wish that we could have the opportunity to speak with Don Cherry. I know it won't happen. We're too young. We're too fresh. We're too new. We do have some Hockey Night in Canada connections on this show, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But I don't think
we happen to be a little open-minded, too.
Well,
we hope, anyway.
We try.
Maybe not me so much, but you are, definitely, Dave.
Well, speaking of that, what a golden opportunity that Don Cherry would have right now to get involved in this You Can Play campaign. And to cast...
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he's the first to sign up to that one.
Right, but to cast aside his personal differences with Brian Burke and realize that this is something of a larger magnitude. Maybe Don Cherry's head isn't so far up his ass that he understands that equal rights in hockey is a good thing.
It depends how he sees homosexuality, if he sees it. I mean, who knows? I'm not going to speak for Don Cherry. We've never heard his views that I know of on homosexuality.
No, I've never.
No, so we don't know where he stands.
No, but what
point.
I'm saying is I think it would be a real good move for Don Cherry. He would make a lot of friends if he were to do this, if he were to stand up and say... I mean, he dresses like Liberace, for crying out loud. Why can't he get on board with this?
I don't think Don Cherry is worried about making friends, Dave.
No, unfortunately not.
No.
He should be worried about, well, but he's got the ratings, and he's got the advertisers, and nobody's walking away from it.
No, he's not worried about making friends at all. At this stage in his life, at this point in his career, he can give a crap about what anybody says about him. Well, except for Brian Burke, apparently.
It's an interesting situation with Burke. Supposedly, Burke called out to Cherry's bosses. Now, because of Wilson, and then Cherry responds by saying, what was it, that how dare you say this and then fire him 2 weeks later? Well, maybe a big reason that everybody was yelling fire Wilson in the ACC was because they listened to Cherry.
That could be it. I mean, you wouldn't actually hear him, he wouldn't take credit for that. Let's just say that. Not on the air, anyway.
I'm looking forward to hearing what Dave Bedini has to say about this, the godfather of Canadian indie music.
Something happened there, and I heard Elliot Friedman explain earlier that it most likely is that Don doesn't like it when people don't have something to say to his face.
I wish we could say this to his face, Jay.
Yeah.
He doesn't
anybody the opportunity to say anything to his face, unless it's Matt Cook or it's Chris Nyland.
Or good Kingston boy, Dougie Gilmore.
Yes.
And I got no problem with good Kingston boys. My favorite band is
Who
Tragically
Hip. Who won so many Stanley Cups with the Toronto Maple Leafs because he's from Ontario.
I want to go to Yemen.
Yemen?
It's the name of this song by the Bedini Band.
I thought we were going to the Middle East.
We maybe will one day, Jay.
Okay.
The Kaufman for our goodwill tour of the Middle East.
Well, let's do that.
Inshallah, one day. This is the Kaufman Show. Let's go out on this song. It's awesome. Killer guitar solo in here.
is a pain in the ass. I'm no schoolboy, but I'm doing all right. They should have heard I'm just around midnight. Yeah, popcorn. Give me some popcorn.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. TSN 990 on your radio dial in Montreal, tsn.ca if you're out of town. Very excited for our next guest, Jay.
I know, you've been excited all week.
Yeah, well, he's the godfather of Canadian indie music. And beyond that, I think this is the first time that I've ever read a book and then had a chance to speak to its author within 12 hours of finishing
within
the book.
Within hours, literally.
Which is really neat. I wasn't planning on reading the whole book. I figured I'd read 50, 60 pages and be able to hold my own in the conversation about Gordon Lightfoot, who's not someone that I know a lot about. And
until now.
Well, and again, the book is about so much more than just Gordon Lightfoot, and I have so much more than just that book to talk about with Dave Bedini. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Dudes, how's it going?
We're fantastic. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks.
We want to run the gamut tonight. You've got the CD. I know the book isn't exactly new, but I definitely want to talk about it because I thought it was just fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah, sure.
And of course, there's all this hockey stuff. Dave is one of the biggest Leafs fans around.
Is that what they're saying in Montreal?
Well, that's sort of what they're saying across the country, isn't it?
I guess so. I am a huge. I'm dyed in the wool, but I'm also just I'm a big hockey fan. I could appreciate what the Jets did to Buffalo tonight, and just an extraordinary game. I don't know if you guys had a chance to see it, but you know the crowd there, it just lifts. I mean, even when you're watching it on television, it lifts the experience in so many ways. My friend who's from Winnipeg was telling me that when the Blues were there a couple of weeks ago, there was a sign. A kid was holding a sign with the Blues logo and like a slash through it, and "We're more into jazz" written on it. You know, it was like, and I guess tonight they were chanting "Silver Medal" for Ryan Miller.
Oh wow!
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
I know.
We know it's a very knowledgeable hockey base, and
pretty
I mean,
good.
I remember when I was young, and I remember watching the New Year's Eve games between the Habs and the Jets, where everybody would wear the tuxedos.
That's right.
And so, I mean, obviously, I think everybody across the country is super happy that they're back.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Now, I know that we don't feel the same warm, fuzzy feeling about our respective hockey teams, though.
Well, you know, I only feel as fuzzy and as warm as the result of the last game. I mean, it's that pathetic. I mean, I feel okay because of the coaching change. And I felt better being a Leafs fan this year than I have in 10 years. I mean, there were stretches when it was really, I mean, we were walking on air. And, you know, it was at a modest height, but a lot of good things that really have happened and lost in the wash over this year, you know, across this year has been the fact that Kessel stands at 5, Lubel stands at 6, you know, the top 10 scoring, they both have dynamic seasons and stuff. So, you know, the positives tend to get lost, you know, in that sea of negativity or negatives, which often end up devouring the season. But
I
feel okay.
I saw you complaining about that on Twitter the other night about hockey writers and their sort of malaise.
Yeah, well, especially in this town. I'm sure it's the same in Montreal.
It's exactly the same here. And the only difference is that here it's been like that for a lot longer this season.
Yeah,
it's only been in the last couple of weeks in Toronto that things have sort of, as Brian Burke said, the 18-wheeler fallen off the cliff.
Yeah, I guess.
That being said, I feel like Brian Burke has loftier things to deal with right now with this You Can Play campaign.
I guess that's true. Yeah. No, that's wonderful. The ads are wonderful, you know. And he's a complicated man. I think that's what makes him interesting, you know, whether you sort of are behind him as a GM or not. But as a person, I think he's a really interesting dude. I mean, for him to sort of extricate himself, free himself from the you know, the machismo of hockey as it exists, certainly at that level, you know, among GMs and governors and presidents of teams, you know, somebody who's been around the game for 40 years, to be enlightened that way and to draw attention, you know, to the, you know, issue of you know, homosexuality and alternative lifestyles as they relate to, you know, hockey players and making it free. And I don't even think they're speaking to a professional level necessarily, but just anybody who wants to play, especially kids, right?
Exactly.
The game should be for everyone.
Yeah, well, I couldn't say it better myself, Dave. It's very sad what young gay kids have to deal with. I mean, not just in sports, but in school and anywhere.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, we've seen the arts community embrace it, and it's time to see the sporting community do it as well.
That's right. It's the last fuselage, really, to fall, you know, and it's, listen, we're all just sitting here waiting for the day that it happens, and I think it will. Certainly will. I hope it does in our lifetime anyways.
You sort of alluded to this situation in a song called Queer a long time ago, almost 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, 1992.
Longer, okay.
Yeah, that was a date of that album, Whale Music. Yeah, no, I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to write a hockey song, but I didn't want to write it about Johnny Frozen Pond. You know, I wanted it to have some sort of political subtext or social cultural subtext. So we were going through, we were touring out west, and we went through Salmon Arm, and, you know, there was I looked down in the valley, and there was a, you know, there was a kid out there, you know, with basically pitchforking bales of hay, and I just, you know, extrapolated from there, and I came up with the setting of this song where, you know, the brother basically, you know, is coming to terms with his sexuality, comes out of the closet, his father basically forces him to leave town, which he does, he goes to Vancouver, and, you know, the son, who has to stay around, says to suffer the fact that, you know, his brother was a fag who had to leave town. The kid is a good hockey player, and, you know, he suffers it as bad as anyone on the ice, and he gains revenge by, you know, the last line of the song is, you know, scored a hat trick on team that called you a queer, and it's this sort of very, very sort of triumphant song, I suppose, from the protagonist's point of view, but, yeah, it's something that I've thought about for a long time, and because I love the game so much, you know, it was so, often you're out and you're talking about how virtuous hockey is in a lot of ways, and then when you sort of look at it coldly, dispassionately, you see where the places where it actually isn't virtuous, and where you know it can, you know, there's a lot of work still to be done.
We're in conversation with Dave Bedini, the head of Bedini Band. His new album is called In the Rock Hall. That's from a Paul Quarrington poem, right?
Yeah, it is. You're right, absolutely, about visiting the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland.
Now, very interesting part of the book, Writing Gordon Lightfoot, where you talk about the influence of Paul Quarrington. No regrets about not having spoken to Lightfoot during the making of the book?
I mean, I'd like to talk to Gord, but in a way, sort of not being able to talk to him gave me a way into this book. For people who don't know, it's basically framed around 8 letters from me to him. Imagining his life, talking to him, asking him questions about what I think his life might have been like. And sort of framed around that is an exploration of 1 week in 1972 in Canada and all these crazy events that happened. The one that I sort of build towards is the Mariposa Folk Festival of that year when Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, Bob Dylan, and Gordon Lightfoot all showed up unannounced to play on the island. So, yeah, I would love to talk to Gord about that weekend. I would love to talk to him about his life, but you know, it's not, you know, he's not social, and he, you know, does his own thing, and I totally respect that too. So,
well, it made for an incredible read. The personal nature of the letters that you composed to him in the book, I thought were just fantastic.
Thanks, Dave. Thank
and yeah, I really, really enjoyed it, and I hope that it gets the credit that it deserves. You go on a bit in the book about how you haven't won an award, and except for the, and hold on, I have it right here, the F.G. Bressani Literary Prize.
No.
It's although it supposedly is blue, and your son thinks it looks like a spaceship.
That's right.
How much of what you do is like? Do you crave that adoration? Is that super
really
important?
I think I was just having one of those kind of sad guy moments when I wrote that. And I was also trying to be, you know, I was trying to be funny partly. I mean, clearly, you know, somebody who comes, you know, is reading that, hopefully the weight isn't lost on them that they're actually reading this, you know, this fully realized work that has been published by a major publishing house in Canada. So I don't have anything to complain about, but you do. I mean, for me, I write mostly about rock and roll and sports. So I don't know if you guys get this in what you do, but you know, people think, you know, sports writers...
You get pigeonholed.
Well, Stephen Brenner, I said it was called the toy department, right? And that's apparently that's what they used to call, you know, sports writers in the 1560s. They worked at the toy department, right? And I think in literati there's a little bit of that because, you know, the subject matter isn't ostensibly as weighted as some other stuff because it's about, you know, these things that we play, right? But I think there is valid a way of exploring the human condition and just people in society and Canadians in particular when it comes to hockey that it's as valid as anything. So, but I always have to kind of fight against that a little bit.
Well, it's always about the larger picture. I mean, even with Baseballissimo, it wasn't as much a baseball book. You know, it had
sure,
so many other themes.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Now, on that Baseballissimo, I'm very excited for the movie for whenever that comes out. I know Jay worked on the script and presented it to you, right?
He did. Yeah. The script is in.
Oh, fantastic.
It's terrific. Yeah, it's great.
And I wanted to ask, I know it was written a few years before, but were you at that Canada-Italy baseball game at the Rogers Centre during the World Baseball Classic?
Yeah, you know what? I wasn't. I'm trying to remember where I was because they gave my friend Fort Pierre Geddy Lee's tickets behind home plate.
Oh, my.
But no, I wasn't there. I had actually gone to a reception. I think it was on tour, but I'd gone to a reception earlier that week where I met the Italians at the Italian consulate because I know a lot of people in the Federation there. Mike Piazza was around.
Yeah, he was a bench coach, I think.
Yeah, I think he was the hitting coach. And he still does a lot of work out there. In fact, Geddy was talking about getting him to be potentially like our consultant on Baseballissimo when it happens and stuff
too.
So, yeah, and Dirk Hayhurst, you know, the Garfus. He's actually a guy I met him last week.
You finally got in touch. He finally gave you some time, right?
I know. That was pretty funny. He checked me out, right? He was very suspicious of me, but then he checked me out and he saw that I was the, you know, real or whatever. So, I had a great conversation. He really doesn't know what he's walking into, but he's going to have the time of his life, I think.
I'd imagine. And he's, I mean, his books, I know his new one I haven't read yet, but his books are fantastic.
They really are, yeah. No, he's great.
So I guess we've got to finish up with you, Dave, but I want to just ask you a couple more questions about
sure,
the book.
Yeah,
the Stones, every time you wrote about the Stones, it was sort of done staccato style. There were no magical letters anywhere. What was the intention in that?
I guess I was trying to mirror kind of the spirit in which that tour, the Exile on Main Street tour, happened. It was very sort of disjointed and, like you said, staccato, kind of formless in a lot of ways. It didn't seem right to create any kind of sort of formal prose when describing that tour. So I kind of wrote those sections as if I was writing on a napkin, basically. So that's kind of what I was getting at with that.
I thought it was pretty neat, and you of course alluded to the shenanigans that happened in Montreal a few days after they left Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. With the bombing in the bay there and stuff. Well, that kind of effectively ended the week in a lot of ways. But, you know, at that time in 1972, we forget, like, how, like, our country was a culturally very precarious in a lot of ways. We didn't know what side, you know, of the edge we were going to fall on. And Canada, you know, our identity was really just kind of emerging at the time. I was 8 years old, so I have a kind of a vague memory of it, but I can certainly appreciate a lot that went down and how we sort of came to be who we are through that time.
And of course, I mean, if the book had continued, there could have so much more to go on. I mean, the October crisis in Quebec with troops in the streets.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, that's right. You get deeper into the fall of that year and it gets crazy. And I just actually finished, I'm just at the edge of finishing this book about the 1972 Canada-Russia series. It's going to be a small book for ECW. But so I've had a chance to revisit some of the events of that fall and actually, you know, and go across the country and to have, you know, sort of taking the pulse of the nation at that time and then in Moscow. It's really, I don't know if you've watched much of, I mean, I just spent, you know, a week watching Game 8.
And oh, wow.
So many incredible things happened in that, and really even in the third period, you know, with Mahovlich going over the boards to rescue Alan Eagleson and Esposito with the huddle at the end, the players, and Rod Gilbert getting in a fight at the beginning of the period. And it starts with J.P. Parise nearly killing the ref.
Right.
So, but it's wildly dramatic. There's so much there and stuff. So, I've enjoyed looking back through history a little bit and sort of, you know, taking the time to study some of those events as a way of illuminating the events of today, I suppose.
Well, that was one of the things that the book does just so well. I mean, I had no idea that the Millhaven story. I mean,
yeah,
for me, that was always just 38 years old.
Yeah, no, of course, that's right. And Gord, you know, and the Downies would have been kids, really, when that was going on. And Mike, especially, I've talked to, he directed my two hockey films. He remembers, Dad with the shotgun on the porch, right?
Like, wow.
Really, yeah, terrified that, because we were just a little bit, we were younger then, too. So when that sort of stuff happened, especially in Canada, it really rippled, it really registered. That sort of thing happens every day now, but back then it sent shockwaves through our community, definitely.
It's a wonderful book about the sort of the end of Canadian innocence, both musically, politically, sports-wise. So you talk about the end of the three-minute shifts, and I thought it was just a fantastic read, and the album is great, Dave. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Anytime. Listen, give me a shout. I'd love to talk to you guys.
Awesome.
Okay, pal.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.
There he goes, Dave Bedini, Bedini Band. Let's give our third caller in the Rock Hall. Jimmy? You know, yeah. What a beautiful song. Let it play for a bit. The problem with 10-minute songs, you got to pick your moment in the song you want to play. This is The Kaufman Show, live and unedited. Hope everybody's okay. I want to thank Dave Bedini. Brilliant man. This is The Kaufman Show, and we'll be back.
We are torn from the pages. We are torn from the pages. From the pages, from the pages, from the pages. Crowds howl for blood, they go on foot. Bold sons of Thor, sword for sword.
Your head pounds like fists in the night. And the woman at home, she said you're no good. You stepped out cause you know that she's right. Well, good times are found in a bottle and a Ziploc bag. And when you met, it was love at first sight.
Welcome back to the show.
It's 8:50.
Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. This is The Kaufman Show, and we now have a special guest joining us in studio. Good friend of ours. It's Sean Bunny Farrell. Hello.
Bonsoir, Dave.
How are you, man?
Very good. And yourself?
Good.
How are you, Jay?
I am well, Sean. Everything okay with you?
Just wonderful. Thank
good.
You.
Your virgin ears are intact? You're okay?
Yeah. You're not a priest or anything, are you?
I'm hanging in there.
When's the last time you were in studio?
Boy, I was just thinking about that. It's probably been about 7 years or so.
Okay, so yeah, it was when I was interning and during the lockout, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Good times.
Good times.
Yes, we've grown so much.
Sounds like a bit of PBS radio there. Good times.
The more you know. Did you, I guess that would be more NBC than PBS, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, hey, well,
ding, ding.
It's time for a PSA. It's always time for a PSA. Sean, what's new, man?
Hanging in there, Dave.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
All right.
Yeah.
What's give us something.
Well, I've been writing at Classic Auctions for a few years now.
Okay.
Which is an online hockey memorabilia website. And get to see a lot of really interesting things there. People, I bet. I've seen quite a few Stanley Cups cross my my desk over the years. Well, the miniature.
I was going to say, I hate to break it to you, but there's only one. actually, there's two, right?
No, there's three, actually.
There are three.
Yeah, there's the original, which was retired in 69.
Oh, okay, the actual, sure.
The actual sure. Stanley Cup itself. Then there's the Stanley Cup that's presented, and there's the stand-in that... they put on display
that they allow the people to touch.
Yeah. No, actually, that one goes out.
They let them. Okay, yeah.
But that one.
Well, they shouldn't. No, I don't know what that means.
Funnily enough, our last guest, Dave Bedini. If you go to his Twitter page, Hockey-esque, there's a picture of him and his band. They were doing Hockey Day in Canada in PEI, and they're all sort of hovered around the Stanley Cup, and they all look so awkward. Like, oh, we can't touch this. We're Leafs fans. I don't know. I got to stay away.
Leafs and, fans. That's nice.
Well, I would imagine that. I mean, I have, I don't know. I don't feel like I've seen the Habs win the cup. I feel like it's okay if I touch the cup. I wouldn't want to jinx anything if the Habs hadn't have won a cup in my lifetime.
I don't think
two,
Leafs fans have to worry too much about jinxing anything at this point. You know, when you're going on 50 years.
Well, we're not fans of kicking. We don't kick people when they're down here. But
we're not kicking them.
Was it gently poking with a stick? Or,
Dave's simply implying that there's an invisible force field around the Stanley Cup for when Leaf fans want to come and touch it. They just can't.
Anyone with that hasn't won in a while.
I think Leaf fans are willing to try anything at this point.
Man, I feel bad for Leaf fans. I know I'll take a lot of flack for saying that, but I feel bad for Leaf fans. There was a real malaise to that town this weekend. In any hockey-related conversation, I've never seen a group of people so downtrodden.
Just when they had a chance to kick us when we were down.
I know.
They just can't do it.
There was no sense of happiness in the bar when the Leafs won that game.
Maybe relief?
Yeah, that's what
more,
I was thinking.
More like relief.
Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe,
when
yeah.
your general manager is referring to terms like
the 18-wheeler falling off a cliff. Wow. Poor guy. Honestly.
Speaking of the Leafs GM, very, very impressive performance by his son on
Melnick
on
today.
Mitch's show.
Yeah, fantastic. He's been all over.
A chip off the old block?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, does he ever sound like Dad?
When I saw the commercial, it was unbelievable. Yeah. I said exactly the same voice and the same demeanor when he's speaking, too. It's all business. All business.
Yeah, and
but it was a great interview.
I imagine that Brendan was probably the same. And the fact that these two guys who, this so obviously isn't their passion and isn't what they feel that they've been mandated to do in their lives, and they're dropping it and they're picking this up. And for Brian Burke, this has got to be a huge change in his mindset and from what he's surrounded himself by since he got into hockey.
I don't know. I can't see inside the guy's mind from that perspective.
Everything I've heard was that the second that Brendan came out of the closet to him, he changed. Everything changed.
Well, if that's the case, he's certainly handled it very impressively. And, you know, you talk about the passion. Well, they obviously do have a passion for it, you know, whether it was foisted upon them by circumstance or not. They are doing something very, very impressive right now. And if we get a player who comes out publicly, hopefully this will make that path a little easier for that player.
We're joined in studio by freelance journalist Sean Farrell. You can follow him on Twitter at SeanFarrell27. Did you hit 100 today?
I did, actually. Hey, I hit 101 before we even got on the air.
And you still showed up. Eh?
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't. I couldn't mail it in, Dave.
I think the goal is to reach a lot higher than that 100, sir.
Yeah, 105. We're going for it. Don't look back.
As they say on The Simpsons, reach for the skis. So guys, something I wanted to get to, and you've spent probably more time in the Olympic Stadium than anybody I know.
Spent a bit of time there, yeah.
Covered the expos for the Associated Press for how long?
7 years, last 7 years, do you have expos exist?
The last great 7 years.
That's right, the Super Seven, if you will. The Splendid
the
Seven.
The Headcount Games.
Yeah, if you'd only known me, Sean, back then.
Yeah,
you would have been yelling from the way that you look for me from the press box at the Bell Center, and you peek into 301 and see
would,
me.
Would have been a lot easier to find you too, Dave.
Way easier. Way easier. You could have just yelled out for me. But, of course, big news today, Olympic Stadium, the wonderful venue that we've all frequented for so long.
That's exactly what it sounded like.
Well, a little louder, maybe more of a...
Probably a little louder.
You know what's really curious, Dave, is you have a construction site, and you had the accident in the tunnel last year where it was construction.
The paralooms, yes. I drove out of that tunnel about 6 hours before that fell.
That accident. Is nobody taking into account that, you know, if there is construction going on, that it might affect the integrity of these concrete structures underneath?
I think the integrity of the Olympic Stadium has always been in question, whether or not there's construction adjacent to it or not. Today was the everything's all right, don't worry everybody, we still got that big soccer game on the 17th.
Yeah, can't wait for that.
We've already sold 41,000 tickets. Would you go?
I'm not going anywhere near that thing. I'm not. First of all, I hate it.
Last time I was there, I was with you.
Yeah, and you know what? I realized something came over me.
Yeah,
during it
was
that.
Sitting with me and seeing how miserable I was.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was one thing. And fearing for your life.
No, I've never been afraid going to the Olympic Stadium.
I've never been afraid either. I'm not a person who's afraid every single day, but I'm not going anywhere near that place. Not because I'm afraid of it, but because I hate it. I hate it, Dave, and I realized how much I hated it when I went there during the last game. It's just, what a dismal...
The football game that you
and I went to. It was the semifinal.
Yeah, it's not last year, but the year before.
Semifinal. That's right. And I went there and I said, wow, this place sucks. It's terrible. It's a terrible place to watch anything, even a concert. It's a terrible place to watch dirt bike races. It's a terrible place to watch extreme games or go to a car show and apparently a boat show as well. You just don't want to go there. It's just an awful place, bad lighting, damp, concrete, no charisma, no character. I'll never go there again.
Does everybody still think that Penouf Metro should be renamed after Gary Carter? Or the Olympic Stadium should be renamed after Gary Carter, or something in Olympic Park, this place that people are afraid to go to?
Yeah. That's exactly what Gary would have liked.
You see Stu Cowan's suggestion today?
I did not.
Stu Cowan suggested a statue at the Bell Center with the four statues that are already there, the Beliveau, the Lafleur, the Richard. What's the other one? Is it Howie Morenz?
Yeah.
Yes.
Howie Morenz is
there.
Okay. I disagree. That's Place des Canadiens.
Yeah.
And it's actually about to move, right? They're putting up a condo there. And they're finding a new spot. They're switching it over to the other side. They're putting up a 52-story condo there. It's going to be the tallest building in Montreal.
Really?
Yeah.
Doesn't look like they have a lot of space to put a condo.
It's the same theory that they did in Toronto.
You're going to knock down Baton Rouge?
Don't want to say that. No. Oh. Exactly where Place des Canadiens is, where that Centennial Plaza is going to be turned into a condo.
Right in the back. Okay.
They actually had that in the original plans that they were going to put up a tower, so I'm not surprised.
You know what else
that.
They had in the original plans that I still look at in the opening night program that I have from when the Molson Center opened in 1996? They wanted to put a skating rink in the Windsor Courtyard, and I thought that was just the best idea. Now, first of all, it would chase away all the dope smokers.
No, it won't. Dave. No, it won't. It might encourage them, as a matter of fact. Dude, ice.
Ice, yeah. That's it. Montreal stoners walking around going, dude, ice.
It's a gateway drug.
There's an abundance. The other plan was to put up a big screen on the side wall there, that glass wall that faces the Windsor Courtyard of the Bell Center, and then have that be a public spot for congregating to watch events. And when they first put it up, they said, we're going to...
Yet again, discouraging the dope smokers.
Well, the idea was, when it was initially talked about, and I hope somebody else remembers this, the goal was to have it ready for the Atlanta Olympics so that people could go outside and watch Donovan Bailey win that race in the summertime. I think I watched it at Peel Pub.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Were you old enough to get in there?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
Different times, Jay, different times.
Yeah, actually not that different, telling you the truth.
This is the Kaufman Show, and look, it always goes back to baseball, huh?
It always does.
Unbelievable. Yeah, we like music. Nothing says baseball like the Rolling Stones, right? This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. Special in-studio guest, Sean Bunny Farrell. Soon going to have more Twitter followers than all of us.
At 103 now. I wasn't following him for some reason. Sorry, Sean.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. Come together on more than Springsteen, though. Most days it's been enough. I honestly called Gord Downie out on that line. I thought that he was trashing Springsteen. He assured me that he was not. Springsteen album.
You don't call out the boss.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. I mean, the new Springsteen album, Wrecking Ball, drops in 7.5 minutes.
Why are you not lined up at the music store?
Because I can be in front of my computer now.
Oh,
those
okay.
days are long over.
Oh, is that what you do? Okay. Not going to sit outside H&M like those.
H&M. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like those...
H&M and V.
Yeah. Well, yeah, H&M has music too, doesn't it? No.
No, I don't think so.
Well, I'm getting mixed up with something. I don't know. I don't go to stores. That's ridiculous.
Do you remember how many record stores, tapes, whatever stores there were? Like, there used to be 3 or 4 in every mall.
Sure. Sure, you used to go to each one to see which one had the best deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were tons.
Days is over.
Discus.
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 Oh, my God.
Discus. What
wow.
was the other one,
Thank
too?
You.
There was another one.
There was one that with 2 letters.
Sam the Record Man?
Of course. Sam the Record Man, iconic. I was.
That's what A&M, I think.
A&M, well, that was a record label.
Yeah, but wasn't, okay. I don't know.
I don't remember.
That's why I thought of H&M. I don't know.
There were,
what do I know?
I mean, obviously, HMV was always around as well, but my.
Still around.
I mean, I sat here telling you the story of every hip album I've ever bought and where I lined up to buy it. And, of course, Sam the Record Man downtown used to open at midnights for when albums came out. That was amazing. By the way, first time I ever saw Dave Bedini in concert was with the Rio Statics at the Spectrum. And I didn't really know who they were, but there was this girl in my high school who just thought they were the best. And she was a little older than me, and I always thought she was really cool. So I kind of latched onto the Stereophonics because of one Bethany Nurse. And
I'm sorry, who?
Her name is Bethany Nurse.
You're making that up.
Swear to God.
All right.
Swear to God. Haven't laid eyes on her in probably 10 years, but she, I don't know how she did it, but she got up on stage that night and sang with the band. Dave Bedini's a cool dude. There's a reason they call him the godfather of indie rock in this country. And do check out, he's got 10 books out now. He just told us he's writing his 11th about the Summit series. They're all about, well, they're mainly about sports and rock and roll. kind of makes me happy.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's why you're up till 4 in the morning.
Yeah, well, it was an incredible book. Just an incredible book. I you know, the same thing like I was saying to you last week with Chad Harbach's The Art of Fielding, which you should read, Bunny, if you haven't.
Okay.
Fantastic book. They're too short. You want them to go on forever. I remember feeling that with The Tender Bar, J.R. Moringer, who I'm hoping we can get on the show. That would be super cool.
But, yeah, I got to get on that. I haven't gotten on that.
Yeah, yeah.
And of all people, I should. I don't know why I haven't.
A man who makes a bar so tender, I think you absolutely should.
It's what I do, Dave. It's what I do.
Speaking of tender bars, we got $50 to give away at Brewtopia.
The brew.
The brew. Hope you guys were down there over the weekend for Shane Murphy. He tore the cover off the place. Somebody tweeted a picture of him and wrote, Shane Smith at Brewtopia. I was like, I think it's Shane Murphy. Yeah, who's Shane Smith? I like embarrassing people on the radio.
Saw that tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of calling.
Well, how dare you, sir? Besmirch Shane Murphy of NDG's good name. Come on now. So, I don't know. Should we, you have anything clever we can make people do to win this?
You're asking me?
You are the clever one in the room.
No, I am not clever.
Sorry, you're the good-looking one. Well,
That's a little bit better, a little bit more precise.
you want a trivia question?
Sean, you are the maven of trivia. You are the Bell Center trivia guy.
We have no general knowledge whatsoever, so you go ahead and do that.
I host
Sean.
That the first intermission in the Beauchamp Lounge every game.
Who's the best?
Oh, they're all... They're fierce, all fierce competitors.
Well, if you had to pick one to put on your team.
I would not.
Really?
I would pick myself to host it because that's what I do best.
I'll tell you, if you want to earn some brownie points, I'm pretty sure that Frankie listens to our show. So you could drop his name right now.
Monsieur Gagnon?
Oui, oui.
Yeah. Actually, Frankie's so busy, he's never really sat in.
You're kidding me.
No.
Well, that should change.
Marc-Antoine has been by. Marc-Antoine Godin from La Presse. And
well,
the first group.
The only time I was ever lucky enough to be in the press box, you included me in your trivia game, and that was hella fun.
Good stuff.
I believe that the question was we had to name as many brother tandems that had played for the Montreal Canadiens as possible.
Okay.
It was pretty intense.
We've had some good ones.
Yeah, you're quite good at it. If you want to think about it,
I've got one ready for you.
Oh, really?
Right now.
Oh, okay.
Let's go. We got $50 on the line.
We
right?
do.
Yeah, okay. So listen, I've been covering the Canadiens since 91, 92.
Okay.
And the question for tonight will be simply, who has recorded the most points in the NHL since 91, 92?
Wow. Okay. 514-790-0990, 1-866-896-2546. You can also tweet your answer at me, The Kaufman Show. Most points in the National Hockey League since the 1991-92 season. Not just in one year, but overall.
No.
Cumulative.
Total. Exactly.
Okay.
And they can be active or they could be retired.
All right. Well, we'll go to break and we'll take some calls. Or you want to do one on air? We got a couple here. Yeah, let's do a couple on air. Why not? Nothing like watching people fall spectacularly on air, isn't it? We got Rick. Nick. Hey, Nick. How you doing? My R's and N's from across the room are a little tough. How are you, man?
I'm very good. How are you?
Great. You have an answer for Sean's trivia question?
Yeah, Joe Thornton?
Nope. Joe's not even in the top nine.
Wow. Not even in the top nine. I had to pick the 10th guy. this is Danny. Let's go to Danny. How are you, sir?
Not bad. You guys?
Very good. Thank you.
Timu Salani. Is what I would be saying if that was correct.
Oh, Sean, you're evil.
Oh, number two.
Thank you for the call,
number
Danny.
Number two on the list, Danny. Sorry.
Oh, wow. Nice try, Danny.
So close, Danny. Thank you very much for trying.
Sean, the dramatic pauses that you threw in there were torturous for him, I would imagine.
They hate me. That's the one thing that both teams agree on at trivia is they ultimately hate me.
We're looking for the player with the most points since 1991-92 on the line is $50 at Brewtopia. Let's go to Eddie. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Good evening.
Eric Lindros.
Sean Farrell?
I'm afraid not.
I'm afraid not.
Pause again. Brutal.
Let's go to George. Hello,
I was
George.
At Jimmy's reaction over there.
It's my guy, Jeremy Yeager.
You are correct.
Hey! All right. Congratulations, George.
And all you need to claim that prize is
what do I win?
How many points? How many points exactly?
Guys, I have no idea.
No. We'd never be so mean. You win $50 at Brutopia Brew Pub on Crescent Street, 1219 Crescent, home of some very fine beer and some wonderful live music.
And a trivia night if you'd like to participate.
No, you don't want to participate in that. It's Mondays. You
want
to,
okay.
You want to watch the coffee.
Oh, that's right.
You want to
listen
to the coffee.
Forget
show.
What I just said.
Brutopia, great six nights a week.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, George. Stay on the line. Jimmy will get your coordinates. That was fun. Had a go, Sean.
That kind of fun?
That was my guess, by the way.
Okay.
Was it?
Yep.
On the next trivia question, we'll both write down our answers.
I was trying to.
But didn't have a pen.
But I didn't have a pen. Why would you have a pen? Why would we?
This is the Kaufman Show. Hour one is in the books. When we return, we'll be joined by comedian Steve Patterson. I watched him kill at the Steve Martin Gala a couple of summers back.
He's good. He's funny, man.
Should be a lot of fun. This is We Are Alive, and it's now available on iTunes. Bruce Springsteen, Wrecking Ball.
There's
enjoy.
There's a cross up yonder on Calvary Hill. There's a slip of blood on a silver knife. There's a graveyard kid down below. Red night did come to life. Well, above the stars, they crackle in fire. A dead man's moon throws seven rings. Well, we put our ears to the cold gravestones. This is the song they'd sing. We are alive, and our bodies lie alone here in the dark. Our spirits rise. Carry a fire and light the spark to stand shoulder to shoulder and heart to heart. Boys cried, I was killed in Maryland 1877 when the railroad workers made their stand. Well, I was killed in 1963, one Sunday morning in Birmingham. Well, I died last year crossing the southern desert. My children left behind in San Pablo. Well, they've left our bodies here to rot. Oh, please let them know we are alive. No, we lie alone here in the dark. Our souls will rise to carry a fire and light the spark to fight shoulder to shoulder and high.
Back to the show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Sean Farrell joining us in studio. This song was covered on Saturday night by Arkells and M. Griner. Do you know her, Jay?
No.
M. Griner is, well, she's fantastic. She was so good that 10, 15 years ago, she was David Bowie's keyboard player.
Oh.
She was probably 20 at the time, but she's on the Bowie at the Beeb live recordings.
Okay.
Pretty cool stuff to see her singing Extraordinary with Max. Extraordinary is also one of the CBC's commercial songs. And look at that. we have a guest from the CBC.
Tremendous segue.
That's
tremendous.
Right. Yes, just you know me, I'm the best. Speaking of best, no, that's how you segue.
That's right? Yeah.
Our next guest is Steve Patterson. He's the host of The Debaters, which you can catch on CBC Radio 1 on Wednesdays, 11:30 in the morning, Saturdays at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I've seen him kill at the Just for Laughs Festival, so much so that Steve Martin was jealous. And let's bring him in. Welcome to the show, Steve. How are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Where are you right now?
I am at my place in Toronto watching the Aquarium Channel.
The Aquarium? Oh, wow. Riveting stuff, huh?
Well, it's like a real aquarium, only you don't have to feed it. It's pretty cool. It depends what you did immediately before watching the Aquarium Channel.
You may be attempting to feed it right now, depending on what you did beforehand.
It's pretty entertaining to me right now.
This should make for a fun interview then.
Yeah, how's it going?
We're great, man. How are you?
Good. Fantastic.
I got to say, that kind of reminds me of the Burning Log Channel on City TV every Christmas.
Yeah, that's full-time. That's a full-time channel here, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know if they had it on old Videotron when I was there, but Rogers has really upped their game since I left and came back.
Videotron probably has it like on a 10-second loop.
Right.
You're listening to TSN 990, a Bell Media company.
That's true. We can diss everything else. I'm sure Bell will give you actual fish if you call them. They got the cash. You guys know that. They're filthy rich.
Supposedly, yes. And it all trickles down to us, Steve.
Yeah. just like the CBC likes to spread it around. I'm rolling pretty high.
Well, you're on twice a week, man. What I mean, this is the glory spot. 11:30 on Wednesdays, it's huge.
It is. Sadly, that is prime CBC time, 11:30 a.m. But I'll take it. I like it.
Damn straight. Now, I've seen this on television as well.
Yes. Yeah, we did. We actually taped 26 episodes, and I don't know that they've shown them all yet. We were on weekly, like September till the end of December, and we hope to be able to do more.
Can you describe to our listeners the concept of your show?
Well, yes. Out loud?
But you won't?
I thought that was going to be it. You said yes, and then somebody else goes no, and there you have it, pretty much.
I know. I was relying on someone for a segue there. It didn't come. We have two stand-up comedians that are given a topic in about a month in advance, and they write essentially stand-up for that particular topic. So they write 2 minutes, a two-minute opening and a one-minute finish, and then we have some questions in the middle. And they have to be able to think on their feet in the middle of it. But it's essentially like a political debate, except it's funny on purpose. And I wish more politicians would use comedy in their debates.
Yeah, it would be nice. I'd like to hear a good RoboCon joke right now.
RoboCalls, yeah. That story broke when I was down in New York, and I was trying to make it sound exciting to Americans that was our biggest political scandal.
Those are our problems.
Yeah, robots called people, and they're like, so what did it affect the outcome? I'm like, probably not, but robots called people, man. Pretty neat.
I feel like this story could end up picking up some traction in the States. It's got all the juiciness that they seem to enjoy as far as scandals go.
I guess so, but I mean, as political masterminds go, is getting Canadians to not vote really, how high does that rank? I think Canadian apathy is up there. I think it's like hiring someone to make the Leafs lose more games. Is it necessary? True story.
Steve Patterson, a huge Montreal Canadiens fan.
Yeah, sort of
a converted Montreal Canadiens fan.
I am. I'm a proudly, you know, I grew up having to watch the Leafs because there was no choice. I would have watched an Aquarium Channel in those days that existed. But I was a kid that was born in Toronto, so if I wanted to watch hockey, I was stuck with the Leafs. And they would cut to, and this was, you know, the early 70s. This was the Habs heyday. I sort of grew up watching, and they would cut to the Habs game where they would score endless goals and be on a power play. And I would ask my dad, what's that? And my dad would, this is a true story too. My dad would say, that is a, I don't know if I, can I say, I can't say what
you know, tonight.
Gotta be careful tonight.
Yeah, Yeah, I censored myself there. He would say, that is a GD power play, son. I was about 7 at the time.
Steve, you obviously didn't hear our interview with Dave Bedini before. I think you could have said the GD word.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Was it spicy?
A little bit spicy. Well, you know, as you'd expect from somebody as revered and eminent as the godfather of indie rock.
Yeah, I love Dave Bedini. I wish we were all there in the same room. Is he in Montreal right now? Or?
No, he was on the phone before. It's just he made GD seem downright crystal clean.
Yeah, God forbid you should turn off the aquarium channel and maybe tune in. Do a little research.
I know. I apologize. I'm ill-prepared for this. I should have been more prepared. I'm giddy because I get to go back to Montreal this weekend, which is certainly my favorite city in the country to spend some time.
Are you at the Works this weekend?
I'm at the Works, yeah. I think there's five shows in total. And then I'm doing, in between that, I'm speaking at the Irishman of the Year breakfast on Saturday morning.
Fantastic, so, honoring Mr. Bill Hurley.
That's right, who is probably my favorite Irishman in Montreal, just for sheer time spent in his establishment.
I think he's the only one left, actually. Are there any more Irishmen left?
I don't know. First of all, I have to say a personal hello to my buddy Jay. Jay, it's very exciting that you have this show, and I didn't know when we first met on Manline those many years ago that we would both become media personalities like this.
Yeah. And how you feel now, sucker? Huh?
I feel great.
Good.
And, I'll never forget that first night in the bathhouse.
Well, you know they say if you can play, you can play. You know, and we don't care here, so, you know.
Listen, I'll take whatever I can get.
As Pierre Trudeau said, the nation has no business in the bedrooms of the people.
Or the bathhouses.
Or the bathhouses. You know, your background.
Can you imagine if Pierre Trudeau had said the nation has no business in the bathhouses of the people?
I have imagined that several times. Most recently, just now. Oh, man, I wish I'd heard Bedini.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, you can go check out the podcast right after the show is over on iTunes or thekaufmanshow.podbean.com, and you can not only listen to Bedini, but Patterballs as well.
Beautiful. I would love to listen back to this seamless interview.
did you meet my lovely co-host at Bourbon Street back in the day?
Who's your lovely co-host?
That would be me.
Oh, Jay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Forgot about the bathhouses already, have we, Patterson?
You mean the bearded lady. Sorry. Yeah. I thought there was someone else in there with you. Yes, I did meet back in the Bourbon West days, and my mother once blessed him 15 times in 2 minutes. True story. Hey, Jay?
Yes.
Were you sneezing like Jimmy or what?
No, she was a lovely lady, and I just, I don't know, I guess I was nice to her. And, yeah, I think I'm ordained now. I mean, it was amazing. What a lovely, lovely woman, and she just blessed me several, God bless you, God bless you, and now I know I'm safe.
Well, and it serves you well, obviously.
Yes, it does.
You've made it, kid.
Ever since then, nothing ever has happened bad to me. Nothing. Nothing at all. Yep.
You're welcome. the blessings of an Irish woman. It's either blessings or guilt, but they're giving out something every hour of the day.
Well, don't worry, Steve. We've got the guilt side covered from the Kaufman angle.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Kaufman doesn't sound like an Irish name.
No, but
it's the other guilty religion.
I know, they are almost the same.
Yeah.
We do it just as good as you. Let's put it that way.
Just different headwear. That's the only difference that I can tell.
I think the other big difference is whiskey.
Whiskey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys don't have Jewish whiskey?
No.
it burns a little too much.
What would be the equivalent of Irish whiskey in the Jewish faith?
Pot?
You guys like it dry.
Very, very dry.
Just found out, Steve, that you'll be back on this radio station sooner than you know it. Ron Razor has tweeted in to tell us that TSN 90 is airing the Irishman of the Year breakfast live.
Oh, nice.
Well, so there will be no recycling of jokes, good sir.
Well, fortunately, I haven't done any yet. I did it a few years ago, and I spoke right after Scotty Bowman. And Scotty, of course, being, you know, you might as well be following a speech by Jesus in Bethlehem, going after Scotty in Montreal. And unfortunately, what happens at the Irish breakfast is that, you know, you drink endless amounts of Irish coffee. So I would love to get a hold of that tape because I was so hammered that all I could think was, I can't believe I have to follow Scotty Bowman in Montreal. And I had to pee from the first minute Scotty started speaking, and that was, as you know, over 3 hours ago. So I think I slammed him for going over on his time, and I'm looking forward to trying to redeem myself.
Well, they invited you back, so maybe they were as drunk as you.
Possibly. Those are my people.
Joey Elias is still doing jokes about that to this day.
Yeah?
To this day, yeah. I think we're 3 years later, 4 years later now, and he's still doing jokes about it every year at the breakfast.
About Scotty?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He likes to talk. He's a motor. I'm sure his players went out there and played that well just so they wouldn't have to hear him. It's intimidating listening to that guy.
Funnily enough, I saw Ken Dryden speak a few weeks ago, and he talked about how wonderful things were and how much freedom they had when they won and how difficult things were when they lose. So they just decided they weren't going to lose.
That's right. Well, it's a whole different thing. You used to have the same teammates for your whole career too, right? Or a lot of it. And now you never know. You never know who's going to stay around. I don't know how we segued into a serious sports conversation. That's just me.
Well, we can go right back to being ridiculous if you want.
Beautiful.
All right.
What's do you guys do a sports angle on this though, or what?
A little here and there.
Yeah, we try to include a little bit of sports once in a while.
We call this a cultural hodgepodge, Steve.
Oh, I like it. I like the cultural hodgepodge. I don't even know what a hodgepodge is, but I know it's a mixture of things.
It's very cultural.
Is it?
Supposedly.
Hey, you guys know this. Did Celine's husband buy Schwartz's?
He did. He did. It was made official today.
Wow.
Yeah, but it will not be franchised. It will stay on Saint Laurent, and that will be that.
Wow, so weird. I have no real. I went to a Jay knows about. I went down to Vegas and somehow had free tickets to go to the Celine show, which is exactly what I was willing to pay to go to it. And what I did not know is that many Quebecers make the trip down to Vegas.
I believe it's called a pilgrimage, Steve.
The pilgrimage. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for, but you guys created that word. So so I'm down there, and it's all Quebecers watching Celine, and she actually closes her show with the Titanic song, and I was I couldn't take it anymore. So as soon as it got to the part in the song where she goes near far, I would sing it like in the voice of Grover to the old lady beside me from Quebec. So I go, near, and if she could have still punched me in the face, she would have punched. But it was one of the highlights of my life, that moment.
Wow. Steve, that sounds like, I don't even know what to say. You must have alienated so many people in your adopted home province.
I did. They weren't happy with me there, but I don't think she cares. We were literally sitting a couple rows behind her husband, and he looks even older up close.
You know what? I remember that from back in the day. I used to see him at Expos games all the time.
And he looked old even then.
Oh, yeah.
He announced also that they will change nothing about Schwartz's. You will still be served pieces of coleslaw on your drinking glasses. So everything's going to stay the same. Nothing changes.
I just don't know why they bought that, but whatever.
Have you been there lately?
No, I haven't. Why?
No, nobody can because nobody can get in.
They're still lined
it's like
up.
Yogi
the door.
Berra said nobody goes there anymore. It's too full.
It's too packed. Yeah. Well, it's but I don't know. Is it what's the average guest check at Schwartz's? What do they charge for a smoked meat now?
I bet you
about $27.
No, it's
it's not. It's not expensive.
You're probably lunch for two, dinner for two. You're probably spending $25 if you're going to town.
Oh, that's not bad.
But it's volume, Steve. It's volume. It's in and out and in and out and in and out. And you share a table with the stranger next to you.
Jesus, you just described my wedding night.
Steve Patterson is at the Comedy Works on Bishop this weekend. Is it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or just Friday, Saturday?
Yeah, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I'll be there. Come on down.
Awesome. Please. I will come on down. I will come see you, and you will make me laugh like you did at the Steve Martin Gala.
Oh, beautiful, man. Well, thanks for having me on, guys. This is fun.
I'll see you later on this week. I won't be able to come to the shows, obviously, but a little after party at my place.
Hey, I will hug you right in the mouth.
Oh, Bathhouses Revisited.
I'm pitching that show to CBC, by the way.
Excellent.
Called Little Bathhouse on the Prairie.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great night.
Take care, buddy.
Cheers.
That was Patterballs. Could tell you two are buddies, Jay. I didn't know you were that good friends.
We've known each other a long time.
Like several years?
Several years, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I can tell.
Yeah, that's as far as we were going to go. Believe me, it gets a lot worse.
One of the other ways I can tell is that he's still sitting on hold, which means he's waiting to talk to you when we go to commercial.
No, he's not.
I think so. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll bring Sean Farrell back into the fold now. And got a fun segment cooked up for you next segment. Kind of thing that would normally cost you $200-$300 an hour if you were getting it done by yourself. We'll be joined by TSN 990 Kaufman Show legal analyst Dan Gradinsky. We'll be back.
I love you, baby, because you put me in the throes, even when you chase me with a fork. Doing the laundry's an extreme sport. Hey, Paul and Donna, glad you took the train to Toronto.
Welcome back to Night Court, or The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, we got Sean Farrell in studio, and we are going to bring in our next guest. It is his debut on The Kaufman Show, and we welcome him with open arms. Dan Gradinsky is the new Kaufman Show legal analyst. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you doing?
We're fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Doing very well.
So we have arranged for you to join us. Hopefully every Monday, especially when there's something cooking in the legal world that you can hopefully add a little bit of insight to.
That's right. And what I was thinking about discussing today was the recent issues that Ryan Braun of the Milwaukee Brewers has had. As I'm sure you've probably seen in the news, he got busted with a drug test, essentially, for testosterone.
Right.
And it seems that after a while, he was given a suspension of some 50 games. And then after appealing it, that suspension was reversed. And I'm not sure if you remember, but this is now there have been 12 previous players from the MLB players who have tried to contest drug testing leveled by the MLB.
Yeah, and the other 11 all got their suspensions, right?
The other 12 have. He's the 13th, and okay. He's actually the only one to do it successfully.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now,
so this is
what's interesting about this to me, Dan, or one of the, I mean, there are a million different sides to the story, but the fact that nobody would know about this if it wasn't leaked.
And that's the biggest thing about this. We'll certainly get back to the whole issue itself of the chain of custody and how exactly
he was able to
get off of. But that's the most important thing here, the long-term consequences, is if you're one of the players, you're saying, hey, all of this was supposed to be confidential. I mean, that was the essence of the agreement between the owners and between the players to put in place this drug testing policy, is making sure that it was confidential.
Right.
Now, that goes not only from the original test, but then when they levied a suspension in the first place, and then through the appeals process, it's only when the final suspension gets put in place that it's actually supposed to be made public.
So, in other words, we never would have heard anything about this because the arbitrator said that Braun was not guilty, right?
That's right. The arbitral panel said that Braun was not, or at least the suspension was going to be overruled on the basis that there was a problem in the procedures. But now if you got to figure that Ryan Braun is now down in spring training, he had a game the other day against the San Francisco Giants, and all things considered, had this not been made public, you would have, been one of the reigning MVP, and you probably would have gotten some cheers. Instead, the fans for the San Francisco Giants were calling him a cheater. So you can imagine that's a bit of
I see your point.
Yeah.
We're in conversation with Kauffman Show legal analyst Dan Gradinsky, and we're talking about Ryan Braun. Why don't you tell everybody about Montreal's connection to this story?
Well, Montreal's connection is that we happen to be the home of the World Anti-Doping Agency. One of their major offices is here, and particularly related to this story is the fact that the testing site, the laboratory, is here in Montreal, in Laval. So while we might not necessarily have professional baseball here in Montreal, at least we know that we're supposedly taking care of the drug testing that keeps the sport itself clean.
Oh, great. And doing a mighty fine job, too, I might add.
Well, at least, you know, the problem itself didn't seem to have been on our end. The problem, everyone seems to say, if anything, that the procedures weren't followed by the collector. And the way this goes is just to give you a sense of how the procedure is set up. So you end up, obviously, we're talking about the nitty-gritty of taking urine samples here, but you have a collector and a chaperone. So there's two people essentially involved with this process. And once the player gives two samples, those are going to be put in a plastic bag. So the cup itself is, there's a security seal placed on it. Then that's placed into a bag itself, which is then sealed.
Okay.
And then into another box. So there's basically everything is triple sealed, and the Ryan Braun himself would have signed off, and he did sign off to ensure that all the processes were followed.
Right, and that the bags hadn't been tampered.
That's right, at least at that point along the way. So that's no one's contested that. And then here's the strange thing: once it gets to Laval, it seems that there was no tampering with the seals themselves. So everything seemed to have been in place.
So then the argument is that Braun's argument was that it could have been left out, which would raise the testosterone levels. And I read somewhere that there's some sort of precedence of that with a British Olympic athlete, I believe.
There is, but it seems that there's not that much in the way of the science. And I'm not a scientist by any stretch. But
right, you're a lawyer.
That's right. I went into law because I couldn't do the science. So we know I'll be very straightforward with that. But nonetheless, this seems to be a procedure from that is followed by quite a few of the other organizations in it, around the world, the other sporting organizations who have just a very intense testing programs as well. This is something normal. Essentially, what the gentleman did is it's 5 o'clock on a Saturday. He's got the two samples and samples for the other players as well. He takes them back to his house. Because essentially he says, I can't get to a FedEx because it's FedEx is closed. It's a Saturday. So he's going to wait until Monday morning and send it off on Monday morning.
Right.
Apparently brings it back to his house. And it's not really clear so far from the reports because we don't have a written decision from the arbitrator yet. But either he leaves it downstairs in his basement essentially on a desk in what he calls a cool and secure location, or he actually put it in the fridge. Now, one way or the other, that doesn't seem to have satisfied exactly what the real wording of the policy itself of the MLB, because it's not very clear exactly what steps have to be followed, because it's a bit vague there. But nonetheless, the arbitrators essentially turned back and said, well, listen, if we can't, if there's no documents that were kept, there's no records kept of how exactly this thing was processed, it's a question of a chain of custody. We can't guarantee that the samples themselves were well taken care of throughout the whole process.
Well, this feels even murkier. Sean Farrell, do you have a question for Dan?
No, my eyes are kind of glazing over, to be honest with you. That's one of the beauties of this issue is it becomes somewhat inaccessible, I think, to fans.
Which is scary to me, because it means that essentially some sort of legalese got Ryan Braun off. Now, the court of public opinion, he's still very guilty.
Well, at the before the arbitral panel itself, the lawyers never contested they never said anything about the actual sample itself. Now, the sample itself from reports says that he had a testosterone ratio. The ratio they normally use is it'll be about 4 to 1 would be a ratio that could be considered over the limit. Now, his was supposedly 30 to 1.
Wow.
So that wasn't discussed at all before the arbitrator.
Really?
That
so it was simply about the chain of command.
That's exactly it.
Wow.
The focus on the procedure and not the substance. Now, obviously, the arbitral panel had the evidence before it, and they said this was enough for us to ignore the fact that the collector is in front of us and he's testifying, ignoring the fact that there was seals that were apparently placed both from the starting point when these samples were actually taken and once it actually got to Laval, that they were still intact. So if that's the position of the arbitrator, we don't have a written decision yet, so there might be another aspect in here that we're not that's not being reported. But so far, that's what seems to be the case.
Now, I'm just a simple radio host. I'm not an unfrozen caveman lawyer like you. But this really seems very fishy to me. It seems like dirty pool. And I don't know how he's going to – I understand that he got off and that legally he's scot-free right now. I do not know how Ryan Braun lives this down.
Well, it's like most of the rest of the athletes that you've seen over time, where a cloud of suspicion hangs over them, even if there's never a positive test, that's one of those hits you take with your legacy. And this is a guy who is National League MVP,
right?
In major endorsements, and you have to assume that that's one of the hits that he's going to be taking over the next little while.
You would assume, but you know he might have a legal leg to stand on in saying, "Well, I wasn't guilty of anything. You can't take this away from me."
It all depends how this plays out in the court of public opinion, and it's still very fresh, this story. So you'll see, how people treat it in the long run.
Where do you see it heading?
With him in the court of public opinion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it depends how it's reported. It depends if there's too much in the way of the focus on the actual testosterone, the test results itself. If that seems to be a pretty striking part of the story, but again, that's it's up to the arbitrator to really decide if what exactly happened.
Jay keeps looking over me. His eyes kind of popped out of his head.
Well, you're saying, Dan, that it was a 30-to-1 ratio on his testosterone level?
That's right, yeah.
And do they use any kind of scientific logistics saying, well, if you leave the sample out that long, that the testosterone levels will increase 30-to-1? Is that even possible?
Again, I'm a lawyer and not a...
but I'm saying, did the arbitrator any of the prosecution, I guess, did they not use this as an example? Well, this is scientifically impossible.
They didn't have the opportunity right?
No, they had the opportunity. They just didn't discuss it. What they focused on was the chain of...
That's shocking to me.
To some extent, it's a bit of a different approach that... that you see in the American legal system, where there's a large focus on procedure, sometimes to over substance. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, it's just a different legal approach.
Would the simplistic law and order version of that be, it doesn't matter what he did because he wasn't read his Miranda rights? Would it be something
like that? Exactly. Exactly. That's where we're going. So it's whether it's Miranda rights or we're saying we're not going to use this kind of evidence because it's tainted. That's a principle that's much quickly that's enforced more often in the U.S. Now it's coming down a little bit over the years, but that's been a pretty fundamental part of their legal system, and it differs a little bit here in Canada.
Well, I can thank Dick Wolf for providing me with that insight. Who needs law school, right?
Exactly, he's done you good.
Just out of curiosity, on a little side issue on this, does the MMA regulate testosterone testing?
The MMA does. They have, in fact, busted at least a handful of fighters in the past. One of the most recent big names was Nate Marquardt. He's a very talented middleweight fighter, but came in with elevated testosterone levels. But what's interesting is there was actually a recent news story from Rampage Jackson, who's a pretty famous MMA fighter.
Sure.
I'm sure you might have heard of him. A guy whose nickname is Rampage, and that's what he goes around as.
Well, because Quentin is just too tame, I think, right?
Right, exactly. So this is a guy who's coming back from a knee injury, and he goes to a doctor, and the doctor says, "Well, I'm going to refer you to another age specialist doctor." One of those guys is sort of involved in age enhancement and age-defying sort of drugs, and he gets a prescription for therapeutic use exemption of therapeutic use testosterone, an exemption to be using that. So now this is a guy, again, whose name is Rampage, who's a professional mixed martial artist, who is diagnosed as having low levels of testosterone. And with that, he's actually now, you can put it through, and this is, I'm basically just taking straight from his comments in a recent press report. The press report basically says, he goes along the line and says, "Well, listen, I went to the gym and suddenly I was lifting much, much heavier weights than ever could before, and I didn't have to recover so much, and it was going really great. And the only problem was that when I actually got time to fight, when it was actually time for me to fight, then I wasn't actually able to lose the weight that I normally would. So he came in overweight.
Wow.
Which I found to be sort of an interesting interesting idea that this gentleman was needed to use therapeutic use testosterone.
I hope that next week we can talk a little bit more about UFC and MMA and the legalities of that, unless some sort of major scandal slash crisis pops up in the meantime. If that's what you could do your studying for us, we would greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely, David. Absolutely.
Dan Gradinsky, the Kaufman Show legal analyst. Do you like the sound of that?
I don't mind it at all.
Yeah, I'm sure it just made his night.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Dan is a real lawyer, not one of those Lionel Hutz ones.
He's a lawyer.
Thank you so much for your time tonight, Dan.
Thanks for having me on, Dave.
Greatly appreciate it, and we will catch up with you very soon.
Okay. Have a great night.
You too. A little insight. Hopefully you didn't gloss over too much, Bunny.
I hope you didn't take that personally.
Well, if he did, then you'll have to buy him a beer
or
something.
Don't insert any Dave Bedini words, though. Don't put words in my mouth.
Jay?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm now well informed.
Yeah, and it's good to be informed when you have an opinion on something.
And the court of public opinion will weigh heavily, I think, on Ryan Braun.
Yeah. Bye-bye Cooperstown. I mean, yeah. There was a long way before Cooperstown. One MVP doesn't get you there.
Well, if I know people well, they've already condemned him in their own minds.
I think the Brewers kept the wrong guy. I think they backed the wrong horse, if you will. This is the Kaufman Show. Our thanks to Dan Gradinsky. Little lawyers, guns, and money to bring us to the break. We'll be right back.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha! An innocent bystander.
See his head rising over the tide. Two dark fish rides a devil astride. Big men go fast on the water.
Big men go fast on the water. Big men go fast on the water.
The child's face presses portable glass. Captain smiles as he drains his last.
It's welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, special in-studio guest Sean Bunny Farrell. And it's time for some more trivia. 514-790-0990. This one's going to be a baseball question. We have in the Rock Hall, the Bedini Band new CD. And it's awesome. You just heard a track from it just now that was called Big Men Go Fast on the Water. Sean, why don't you throw out that trivia question?
Okay, so as a nod to Dave's book, Baseballissimo, we're going to look for the major league player who has the most career home runs, major league player with an Italian surname was the most career home runs.
The Italian American with the most career home runs.
Yes.
All right.
And we'll say that they have to have an Italian surname just so that we don't have somebody with, you know, whose mother was Italian.
Well, Babe Ruth was Italian.
Exactly.
You mean like, okay, exactly. Gotcha.
Did you know that Ted Williams is half Mexican?
No, I did not know that.
So he's one of the greatest Latino ball players in history.
Wow.
Probably the greatest.
Yes.
When you think about it.
Wow. No, I did not. I think they kept that quiet in Boston. Sean's just nodding.
Yeah, that really plays well on radio, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The old nod. Yeah.
They probably did, but Ted did not shy away from defending the rights of those as he came out in the Hall of Fame.
and said that he hoped that Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson would one day be standing there as well.
Wow.
I believe that was in 1970 when he was inducted.
Did not know that.
Yes.
Former Kaufman Show guest and friend of the show, Jeremy Taggart, was telling me about how he used to own a game-used bat from Ted Williams from his last game, the Kid Bids Adieu game, the John Updike story.
Kid Bids?
Hub fans bid Kid Adieu.
Exactly. There you go.
Wonderful book. Wow, we've got a full lines. All right, let's go to Tony. Tony, do you have an answer?
Mike Piazza.
Is one off.
Oh.
One home run behind the guy we're looking for.
Grazie, Tony. Who's next, Jimmy? Jimmy, who's next? We've got Bashir on line three. Good evening, Bashir.
Good evening.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Do you have an answer?
Joe DiMaggio.
No, not Joe DiMaggio.
Not Jolton Joe DiMaggio. All right, who's up next, Jimmy? We don't know yet. All right, we'll give him a second. Joe D was fourth.
Joe D is fourth.
All right, so we're still missing one and three. Bonds.
Bonds, yeah. He was Italian.
His wife was Italian, right? Sonny, the Montrealer that he married?
I don't know.
I believe so.
Yeah, remember Branco, the kid that was the... He was the bat boy for the
visiting club.
Yeah, that was Barry Bonds' nephew, son-in-law, nephew, something. Yeah, that's
brother-in-law.
Right. All right, we got Steve on line one. Steve, do you have an answer?
Roy Campanella?
Not Roy Campanella.
Damn,
that's a good guess.
All right.
Well, thank you for the. Yeah, it was a good guess. His career wasn't very long. He got into that accident.
Yeah, he got into a car accident, was paralyzed.
Also played many years in the Negro Leagues beforehand, right?
Yes, and played in Montreal as well.
Oh, there you go.
For the Royals.
Let's go to Alex. Good evening, Alex.
Good evening, Dave.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm going to take a shot. I don't even know if he's Italian, but Stan Musial.
No, not Stan Musial.
Stan Musial.
I do not believe it's
he was Polish.
I think it was Polish.
Really?
Wow. Don Corleone called, and he couldn't even get the answer
yeah,
right.
I thought you were going to get whacked there.
No, he was in a good mood. It was the oranges in the mouth part. You know,
yeah.
Before everything. All right.
Playing
example.
Playing in the orchard.
I swear Musial was Italian.
Again.
I got a tweet in from Panayotis, who's a good friend of the show. Great segment. I assume you're talking about the legal one before this one. But Braun's story still seems a bit shady. I'm sure there's more than meets the eye. Keep digging. Yeah, I don't know where to keep digging, but...
It's kind of under wraps, isn't it?
Well, no, it just seems like everything's out there, and it's super obvious, and there's nothing that can be done, because everything was followed not to the letter, not by the book. If you will use my very simplistic Law and Order analogy, the Miranda rights weren't read.
Double jeopardy, man.
Yeah, pretty
much. Cannot
be
prosecuted
again. It makes you think of Bill Clinton defining, what was the word...
Is. Yeah, it depends on what your definition of the word is. Watch that wonderful PBS documentary on Clinton a couple of weeks ago. Wow. Crazy.
Amazing.
To think that in 30, 40, 50, 100 years, all that will be thought of Clinton is the wasted opportunities. Because having lived it and been there, that's not my memories going back to the Clinton administration. So much rosier than history is able to...
They seem to, keep it very rosy. But if you dig... There are some interesting things about that guy.
Like anything else, right?
Yeah.
So we're still looking for the Italian-American with the most home runs of all time. Does he have an Italian last name, or is it his mom was Italian?
Oh, no. He's got an Italian last name.
All right.
Can I think of it? This is ridiculous.
Oh, you haven't...
No, I'm so ashamed of myself right now.
I'm ashamed of you too, Jay. Just a little.
I've heard that before.
Well, do you want to win the Bedini CD?
Just give it to me. No, no.
Hey, I bought my own copy on iTunes.
I'm drawing a complete blank here. It's incredible. I don't know.
That's okay. What are we going out on here, Jimmy? I can't remember. Well, feel free to tell us. Oh, no, you don't have to play it right away. You can just tell us first.
Oh, it's Grace.
Oh, yes. This is
the Artels with Gord Sinclair.
Thank you. Gord Sinclair and Paul Langlois. This was Grace 2 on Saturday night at the Horseshoe Tavern. I know this is the one copy, I put up a bunch of videos on YouTube, and we'll play some clips in the next hour. This is the one that I didn't record. It was a full version, and I was way too happy to be sitting there with my camera the whole time. I was dancing and singing, but it was pretty cool to hear Max Kerman imitate imitate Gord Downie. And it was cool to see those guys on stage at the legendary Horseshoe Tavern, the home of wonderful music in Toronto, the place with the checkerboard floors that's referred to in Bob Cajun. Yes, your radio host was a very happy man on Saturday night. Let's turn this up, and we'll be back after the break.
Love you, baby, till the wheels come off. And if you kiss me, well, then I'll never want to stop. And I'm a warm meal steaming from your countertop. Love you till the wheels come off. When I hold you in my arms, I'll tell you of your many charms and kiss you in the morning light if you say it's all right. I know you're tired, I heard you've been used, that your longtime woman, she gave you the blues, but I wanna do right by you. I'm gonna love you, baby, till the wheels come off. And if you kiss me, well, then I'll never wanna stop. And I'm a warm meal steaming from your countertop. Love you till the wheels come off. Daddy don't like you because you're poor, but Mama says it don't matter anymore because, oh yeah, hell, we're big kids now. And when the sweet apple grows from the sour apple tree, that's when you're gonna wanna let go of me, unless I throw you out, kicking and screaming before me. I'm gonna love you, baby, till the...
Welcome back to hour number three of the Kaufman Show. Everybody seems pretty awake in here tonight, too.
I had a very large coffee.
Good.
Very large.
You, Bunny?
That Ryan Braun... case just perked me right up.
It's all the extra testosterone we're feeding you during the break. let's go to the phones. 514-790-0990. Is this our friend Roy and Dorval?
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good. How's the voice doing, man? You sounded rough last week.
Getting better.
Good.
I can take a swipe at that question.
You're too late. Somebody answered on Twitter.
Joe DiMaggio?
Joe DiMaggio is wrong.
Oh, really?
Wrong. The answer, which I will announce now, Habs Lucky Charm, our buddy George in St. Lazare got it. It's Jason Giambi.
Oh, my God, right on.
We're still looking for numbers 3 and 5, though, if you want to make a guess.
But, what was the question?
It's the Italian-American with the most home runs. Now we're looking for the third most and fifth most home runs of all time.
What was Joe DiMaggio?
He's fourth. So there's this one other guy who had more homers than Joe DiMaggio.
Really?
Yeah, and then there's the other guy, number 5, is one behind Joe DiMaggio.
Boy, they're all packed in there together, right?
Yeah, I love questions like that.
Crazy.
A little twist.
Okay, Dave, I'll be listening. Take care of yourself, okay?
Thanks, Roy.
I'll see you probably at St. Patrick's.
Yes, you will see me somewhere out and about on St. Patrick's Day,
okay,
for
buddy.
Sure. Have a great one. That's right, we're going to go out and have ourselves
you
a time.
You going out with Roy?
I don't
You're
know.
You're going to hit the town with Roy?
I'm going to hit the town, and anybody that wants to come find me, I'll be wearing an Expos cap.
Oh, really? Shocking.
I'm not right now.
Oh, I know. Yeah, what is that?
You are. It's a Titleist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I always wear an Expos cap.
Well, good on you.
It's the only nice one I have.
It's a beautiful one. Everybody can see on the Kaufman Show Facebook page the hat that Jay Farrar is wearing.
That he wears a lot.
How do you keep it so clean?
It's black.
Still, that white...
That Expos logo is pretty...
Yeah, it's pretty white.
It's pretty squeaky
I
white.
I would say it's pristine.
Oh.
Do you keep that clean?
Well, yeah, I try to. I try to. But there's a little trick. If you want a fitted cap, if you want to wash it, use a dishwasher. Use a dishwasher and it won't become deformed. And you know what happens when you clean your hats? As I could see, Dave, they start to stretch. And
yeah, this got thrown in the washing machine a few times.
And you look like a 1920s baseball player.
You see?
Yeah. And it fits snugly over your head, and it doesn't quite maintain its shape anymore.
I know, Sean, that was more of a 1930s baseball player. Okay, come on.
That actually ran through my head, believe it or not.
I don't think Edward G. Robinson ever played baseball, to tell you the truth.
You know, let's go back to that Simpsons softball episode for a second, because Sean is here. Chief Wiggum is Edward G. Robinson in that episode. He has no, like, individualness of his own. I don't know if that's before Wiggum was explored as a character.
That's interesting.
But he's totally Edward G. Robinson the entire time. The whole time. And that's it for my impersonations.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I know that's more your bag, Jay.
No, not really. I can do 4 different people. That's about it.
But you do them well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let me tell you about one of the highlights from the concert I was at on Saturday night. You guys know who Andrew Cash is?
That rings a bell.
He's a member of Parliament. He was he's a Toronto indie rock and roller. He was in a great band called Bird with Hawksley Workman back in the day. One of my favorite Andrew Cash songs is a song called Hey Maria that the Hip used to cover way back in the day. And on many a coveted bootleg, I have a copy of the Hip doing Hey Maria. Andrew Cash comes on stage with Maya Davies, actually, who I believe used to serve me beers at Grumpy's. Maya is in the Ladies of the Canyon, which is a fantastic Montreal band. And the Beauties were the house band for that part of the night. Andrew Cash comes on stage, and he's now an MP for, I can't remember what neighborhood in Toronto, but somewhere West End-ish. You know, the NDP have a bit of a foothold in that town, and as well, Mr. Layton, obviously. But Andrew Cash picking up where Jack Layton left off and fighting for the downtrodden in downtown Toronto. And he comes on stage, and the whole night was all covers. It was great Canadian artists covering other great Canadian artists. So Andrew Cash gives this wonderful, passionate speech about, well, about RoboCon and about Harper and how 2015 may seem really far away, but we can't forget what we're witnessing right now. And then they started a song that made me quite happy. And I thought it was a wonderful ode to a wonderful Montrealer. And I pulled out my iPhone and grabbed as much of it as I could. We're going to go out on this. This is a little Mr. Cohen. Because everybody knows. Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Little Andy Kim to bring us in. Yeah, that's right. This song was played on Saturday night. Joe Darcy and the Order of Good Cheer. And could not believe it. There were some that just shocked me. Shocked me. And we might play a couple more for you tonight. But just a wonderful night down at the Old Horseshoe. Taggart was playing. He came on stage with Arkells and the lead singer from Tokyo Police Club and did 4 a.m.
It was like your own little mini Woodstock it going on.
Felt. That's why I'm saying, Jay, it was the best concert I've ever
been
to.
It had a festival feeling to it.
It was a. It had. You know what it felt like for me? It sort of was like when I watched the, I mean, same, same, but different, the 25th anniversary Rock and Roll Hall of Fame concert from Madison Square.
Okay.
Where it was just one band after another, after another, after another, after another. This show went on for 4 hours. I had plans to meet up with friends and, you know, a bunch of friends from the Olympics who I haven't seen in ages who are in Toronto. And the plan was once the show ended, I'd, you know, go thank Nick Dyka from Arkells for the ticket and then go somewhere else and soak up a little more culture.
It was a no-go.
There was no.
How could you leave?
There was no last call, Jay. The show went till 10 past 2 in the morning.
Wow.
And in Toronto, that's 10 minutes after closing time.
Yeah. That's like 6 o'clock in the morning here.
Rocky Colavito, Sean Farrell.
Was number 3. That is correct.
All right. Steve redeemed himself after Campanella. We appreciate it. And number 5, we'll tell you all right now, only one less home run than Jolt and Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah,
I'm
surprising.
Shocked.
Surprising.
Who is it?
Gary Gaetti.
Wow.
Yeah. How about that, eh? Who'da thunk
Minnesota
it?
Twins great.
Who'da thunk it?
Who'da thunk it? Minnesota Twins great. Now, does he have more career homers? I know you don't have this in front of you, but where does he rank compared to other great Twins? I mean, obviously, Killebrew has the most. Where does Ken Herbeck sit on that list? Where does Kirby Puckett sit on that list? Was Kirby Puckett known as a home run hitter?
No. No, he was more for an average hitter.
I know he hit one of the biggest home runs I've ever seen.
He had power, a little bit more power than Tony Gwynn, but he was more of a Tony Gwynn type player.
I loved Kirby Puckett.
Yeah, he was a doubles guy, kind of like DiMaggio.
When I started to fall in love with baseball, it was Kirby Puckett. It was that 91 World Series.
Yeah.
I still have the Sports Illustrated from the 91 World Series.
Great baseball name, too, Kirby Puckett.
Fantastic.
The late, great Kirby Puckett.
That's it. Another one who was just gone way before his time.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine that he's still very much missed in Minnesota. How did they honor Kirby Puckett?
Well, you remember that Kirby left, his legacy was tainted, right?
Oh, that's right. There was some sort of an incident in a bathroom somewhere, wasn't there? Sexual harassment, was it?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
Incidents in the bathroom.
Certainly somebody who, you know, as you said, was revered and then it all kind of went south.
Wow, you know what? I totally forgot about that. But I'd be willing to bet that there's a statue of Kirby Puckett outside of the new field in Minnesota, Target Field.
Nothing comes good out of an incident in a bathroom, ever.
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 Ever. No. I mean,
ask George Michael.
Or the good
Carolina Panthers cheerleaders.
I was thinking more of the, what was his name? Was it Senator Craig?
Yes. The foot tap. It wasn't really a foot tap. He kind of slipped his foot underneath.
His foot, right? He slipped his foot.
Yes. Underneath the next stall. Anyway, who cares, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Does Dave Winfield count as a twin?
He did not in my mind.
He did. Well, then.
No.
No.
See, I'm with you there.
No, no, no.
What about Rod Carew?
Oh, Rod Carew was a... He was a
He's
single.
Definitely
he counts
a twin.
As a twin.
Big time.
Yeah, he counts as a twin.
He counts as a Jew, too.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Way to go.
And as a lyric of a Beastie Boys song.
Which leads to your other question, Dave.
Yeah, I was just more curious.
Yeah,
I assumed that Hank Greenberg is the Jewish American with the most home runs.
That is correct.
How far behind is the number 2?
Quite a ways.
Yeah. He's 3 home runs behind.
You're kidding me.
No, and a modern player.
Yes, thank you, Travis. Larry Craig. Wide stance.
Oh, man.
Wow. Not all pigeon-toed like Mark McGwire, but a wide stance. Tell me, Sean, I don't know who, and we can't have too much dead air.
Yeah. Sean Green.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Thank you, Jimmy. This is a lot of stuff. Let me see if I can rifle through this. In March 2002, a woman filed an order for protection against Puckett's wife, Tanya, alleging that Tanya had threatened to kill her over an alleged affair with Puckett. That month, another woman asked for protection from Puckett, saying in court documents that she had an 18-year relationship with him and that he shoved her in his Bloomington, Minnesota condominium. Then, September 5th, the same year, he was arrested and charged with groping a woman in a restroom at a Redstone American Grill in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. A witness testified that he saw Puckett drag a woman into the bathroom at the restaurant and that she appeared terrified when she came out moments later. The alleged victim claimed Puckett squeezed her hard enough to cause a bruise. Puckett was subsequently charged with false imprisonment, a felony, fifth-degree criminal sexual conduct, a gross misdemeanor, and fifth-degree assault, a misdemeanor. He was acquitted. After a 9-day trial, a jury ruled Puckett not guilty of all counts. However, the damage had been done, and he felt compelled to relinquish his role as Twins executive vice president. Should I keep going?
No, that was good enough.
Okay.
It's pretty clear. It's pretty clear.
Yeah. And once again, going back to what we were talking about with Kaufman Show legal analyst, it's one thing to get off in the court, and it's another thing to have to deal with the public.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess he is a little bit tainted, but, you know, he's not the only one. You know, there's a hell of a lot of guys who've got statues out there that have done far worse.
I'll tell you who's pure, though. Pure as the driven snow.
Who's that?
Steve in Redondo Beach.
Uh-huh.
Let's say
good segue.
Hello to Expo. Thanks, Jay. You know, if you mention that it's a good segue, it becomes a bad segue. Right?
I know. Okay. I know. I'm trying to ruin all your segues.
That's
what I'm doing.
Speaking of ruining segues.
I'm not convinced that was a good segue either.
Wow.
Good evening, Steve.
Good evening. I think I've been listening too long. I'm actually starting to like the music you play.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was a backhanded compliment.
And that's why I just said, I waited half a second and then I said, thank you.
Andy Kim. Very nice.
Well, you know, the old school Montrealers, we've got to represent Andy Kim. You should have seen the show I was at. There was a lot of Montreal play. There was Cohen. There was Andy Kim. There was some Pagliaro going on. It was, it was nice to see Toronto music paying homage to Montreal.
That sounds like it was a rare occurrence.
That's okay. That's why I made the trip. What's going on?
I got a question for you. I read that you're going to be putting together, and maybe you discussed this already tonight, some type of suggestion for a tribute to Gary Carter.
Yeah, I'm working on it right now. And honestly, I've shown it to only two people. One of them is my lovely co-host that sits across from me, and the other is his very talented brother, Mr. Anakin Slade. And I'm waiting to make it perfect before I put it out there. There's been a lot of discussion in the media lately about getting everybody's in a rush to get things out first, and there's no rush. Gary Carter's passed away. The deadline for this is March 31st, and honestly, Steve, I think I've got a great idea. And I want to perfect it, release it, and I hope that everybody gets behind it.
The only thing I can say is that it's the best idea I've heard so far.
So clearly it does not involve the Olympic Stadium.
Clearly. Clearly. It does not involve the Olympic Stadium. It does not involve renaming a street or a metro station. It does not involve putting baseball into a museum like you would King Tut.
A statue.
It is something with an eye towards the future of baseball in this city and not the past. And I think that that's the one thing that people need to realize. Gary Carter spent a lot of time in this town making this a baseball town, and it is not right now. So without giving too much away, Steve, I promise you'll be one of the first to know when I'm ready to make it public. And look at you spying on my Twitter account.
Yes. You have some lurkers out there, I'm sure, more than me.
you still haven't joined, though, so you're actually just going on there and typing the Kaufman Show, aren't you?
Hey, that's as new school as I get.
It's pretty awesome, man.
You know, I'm an old school guy, so I don't think I'll be tweeting too soon. Although,
it's killing me, Steve, to not talk about it because it's on the tip of my tongue, and it's you know how important this is to me. And
I do. I have confidence that it's going to be a great suggestion/idea. I know the deadline's March 31st. Are you going to reveal it on your show?
It will depend. It will depend. We will. I'm hoping that we can talk about it next week on the show. But no, I think we're going to try and roll it out online when it's ready to go. Really, it's just I'm dotting the I's and crossing the T's and making sure that it makes sense right now. I have an idea in mind and it's something that I've thought long and hard about, Steve. It's, I'll tell you, my initial reaction was to back the idea of a statue. For me, that was I thought that was a good idea, and I got I suggested putting a statue next to Jackie Robinson's in front of the Olympic Stadium on Pierre de Coubertin.
Is that where the statue currently is?
That's where the statue of Jackie currently is.
So I thought it was near the old Delormier Downs.
I believe they moved it while the Expos were still here.
Okay.
I'm not sure what year they moved it, but I know I congregated around that statue after the last Expos game, and it's still there. But I got a
far away from the parking lot. By
that's
the
right.
way,
that's right.
Thank God.
A good
safely
half
away from concrete. Being,
a good half yes. kilometer, like Mr. Saputo was discussing today. Steve, I got a DM, which is a private message on Twitter from Delina DeShields, after I suggested publicly that there should be a Gary Carter statue next to Jackie Robinson's, and Delina reminded me just how much Jackie Robinson has done, and that how what Jackie Robinson has done and what Gary Carter has done are not comparable. They're two very different things. And Delina wrote something very simple, which has really, really affected me. Without Jackie Robinson, there would be no Delina DeShields. Jackie stands alone. And I agree with that. I don't think it's appropriate to put a statue of Gary Carter next to Jackie Robinson. Steve?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay. I was pausing for effect and hoping you'd cut in with a, yeah, I totally agree with you.
He wanted you to validate that.
Yeah, validate it.
I don't think it's necessary for me to validate that. What you said speaks for itself.
Good. Good. Thank you.
Any former Expos coming up next week?
Not sure. I put out an email to Cliff Floyd. So we're hoping to get in touch with him soon. Other than that, there's a couple that we're working on, but nothing definite. Working on a really, we'll have a couple of really neat surprises for you next week. The week after is going to be really cool. We'll have the Jimmy Riggers in studio, great Montreal band, and we're going to film it.
Wow.
We're going to film the episode. We've got somebody coming in with a few cameras, and we're going to put it up on YouTube a couple of days after the show, and you guys will get to see how things work in the studio. You'll get to see
a little backstage pass.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not sure how we're going to handle the commercials or not. Maybe we'll tell stories or something, or
maybe
come outside for a smoke with us.
I'll
or
have
something.
To clean up my language a little bit in between.
Yeah, and Jay, you're going to have to dress appropriately.
That'll never ever happen. Never. Why would I do that?
I don't know. It's going to be on YouTube. Seems like it would be the appropriate thing for you to do.
Steve, we don't have to get an Expo on every week to make you happy, though, right? We can just talk baseball.
Not at all. In fact, just the fact that Jimmy has not cut me off tonight and that I didn't say anything politically incorrect, I'm very happy.
Well, you still have a chance. If you want to, I mean, it is Super Tuesday now in the States. If you have anything politically incorrect to say,
we've had our share already. So, I mean, just go ahead. Go nuts, bud.
I'm sure you have, but I'm so non-political that that'll never be a problem.
You're so non-political that you're apolitical.
Yes, I'm not very into politics. I observe, but I'm not very reactionary. I don't cause any problems. When it comes to sports in Montreal, that's a different story.
Are you able to vote? Are you an American now?
I am able to vote, yes.
Do you?
I have not voted yet. I just became an American relatively recently.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Do you still have your Canadian citizenship?
Congratulations on not voting.
Yes, thank you for that too, Jay. Yes, I haven't renounced that. I'm still a Canadian citizen, too.
Well, why would you renounce? Renounce sounds so, like, you know, I renounce any affiliation that I have with the Washington Nationals, but that's about it.
Well, there you go. You see, that's something you would renounce.
Right. Not your Canadian citizenship. I mean, I know the Expos are gone, but come on, Steve.
No, I haven't. I'm physically left, but I'm dual.
Good. Well, we're happy to have at least half of you.
What?
Well, he said he's dual, right?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, let's hope you have the good half. I saw a bunch of Canadians this past weekend. There was a big Montreal reunion at the cafe, and Thursday Anthony Calvillo's coming in for a celebration.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that last week. Please do report on that next week. I think that's really cool. There were some great articles in the L.A. Times after he broke the passing record.
Yeah, I know. Bill Plachke wrote a wonderful
article.
And you know, ESPN covered it, so hopefully there'll be a big crowd out there. And I don't know him personally, but supposedly he's a great guy.
I have heard nothing but wonderful things about that man as well, and I have to say, if you do call in and report about it, it might be the only chance to get some CFL talk on this show.
Okay. I'll let you know how it goes.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Jimmy.
There's a bit of a history there, Sean.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's a Kaufman inside joke.
If you know, you know, right? If you listen, then
you know.
You're part of the crew, exactly. And anybody wants to catch up on old episodes, go to iTunes, type in The Kaufman Show. Or if you want to go the roundabout way, go to thekaufmanshow.podbean.com. That Podbean just doesn't roll off the tongue.
Podbean.
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 Ooh, The Kaufman Show.
Too many consonants. Yeah.
Too many consonants?
Yeah.
Too many damn consonants with you.
Podbean. Podbean. How's that?
One more time.
Podbean.
Wow.
That's kind of coffee related, you know?
Podbean?
Yeah.
Sounds
coffee. Podbean. Yeah, coffee related.
Yeah, it's like I'll have the Podbean latte. I don't know. I don't know anything about coffee. I had my first coffee tonight.
You know what? I could tell you didn't know anything about coffee last week when we were interviewing Rachel Robinson. And she mentioned Jackie going to work for Chock Full of Nuts, and you looked at me like,
I know what Chock Full of Nuts is because I used to collect garbage pail kids, or no, what was it? Was it garbage pail or those cards that they used to have, and they used to have Chock Full of Guts? So, researcher
those
that
were
I am,
the garbage pail kids. I remember
was,
that.
Was from... it? No, it wasn't garbage pail kids. It was something.
Yeah, like... it was like a take on Cabbage Patch Kids, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't that. It was something else where they used to have these cards where they'd imitate. They were just really bad jokes, but when you're seven, they're hilarious.
I remember getting those. I don't know if they were stickers or cards, but that was the kind of thing you'd get at the hockey game, like the Opeachy stickers. Not like a Habs hockey game,
yeah.
Like a TMR Arena hockey game.
And they'd make fun of product puppy. Names. Yeah, so they had like Pepto-Bismol, and it was a dog, and you had... Chock Full of Guts, and it was just like a can with guts coming out of it.
And that made you know when Rachel Robinson said Chock Full of Nuts.
This is where my knowledge comes from. It comes from my childhood collecting cheap rip-off cards.
Well, that's like mine, like what I was saying with The Simpsons, right?
Exactly.
It gave me the desire to be more inquisitive.
Yes.
I'd see something and I'd ask, what is that about? And I'd want my answer. You got that from the Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah, the secrets of the universe usually lie in something stupid like that from your early childhood.
Like, who would have thought that Gary Gaetti was the...
right.
Or that Sean Green has the second most home runs of a Jewish baseball player.
Who would have thought?
Wow. I mean, I know he had some great years in Toronto, but I thought it kind of felt... How many home runs is it?
328.
Oh, that's quite a few.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hit over 300. He didn't have a very long career either, so, and he had quite a few good years, but...
The last I heard of Sean Green is that he's playing for the Israeli team that's trying to qualify for the World Baseball Classic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool. Do you think they can make it? Who else is on that squad?
There's several guys that we could probably look it up during the break, but there's several major leaguers that are involved with the team. It's obviously very easy to get...
Yeah, come right in.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. And funnily enough, I will have him on the show, a guy named Matt Mills, who is the coach of New Zealand's baseball team that's trying to qualify as well. And they've fully put out, like, casting calls. If your parents have Kiwi heritage and you know how to throw a ball, but supposedly they're moving up there. Like, they beat, I think it was Guam or the Maldives or something like that, or...
That's crazy.
You know, the big match at the bottom of Mariana's Trench. And I don't mean to make fun, because frankly, Canada plays in
rugby. Well, I was
going to
say, it sounds like
Canada's
soccer team. So.
Well, the soccer team is...
We beat up on Djibouti the other day.
Yeah, and they took a lot of flack for losing to Armenia, but Armenia is like 30 places better than Canada in the world rankings. You get what you put in, people.
Right.
You know, there's a lot more funding and a lot more support for our women's soccer program, and because of that, they're a lot more successful. And they're going to London. The men are staying home. I'll tell you, the rugby tournament I thought was fantastic this year.
It was great. We were actually really into it.
Yeah, because we were sitting up late night and, you know, we were both hanging out and we knew that 5 a.m. wasn't so far off.
Yeah.
And you could sit up and watch this amazing match.
I became a real fan. A real fan. I mean, I always liked rugby, but I would never go out of my way to watch it. And something really brought me in that tournament.
I found myself, I was trying to learn how to, like, what the rules were. Fully admit that I did not know how to, the rules for rugby.
I played in high school, so I'm pretty familiar with the rules.
But, you know how I figured it out? I went onto YouTube and I typed in rugby rules, and they pulled up the demo from one of the EA Sports rugby games. It's awesome. Why not? You know, and I wish I'd known that years ago. I would have, as a kid, when I was playing video games, I would have totally bought a rugby video game, and that would have taught me how to play.
You can learn, like I said, the secrets of the universe lie in strange places, my friend.
Hey, Jimmy, let's...
Hey, Jim. Hey, how you doing, Jim?
Tired, Jim?
He's glazed over.
We're talking steroids
again? We were talking steroids again.
Yeah, they covered Corey Hart. This is Kevin Drew from Broken Social Scene.
Nothing wrong with
here.
Nothing wrong with Corey Hart.
Nothing at all. Fellow St. Georgian. This is The Kaufman Show. We'll be back. You're listening to The Kaufman Show. We'll be right back. Lovely and talented Sarah Jean Skouten bringing us in. That is the Ballad of the Southern Midwife. You're listening to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. Special in studio guest, Sean Bunny Farrell. You having fun, Sean?
Yeah, you said the violin kicks in there, Dave. I'd say that's more...
The fiddle kicks in?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a little more fiddling music.
I said it off air, though, didn't I?
You did.
Okay.
Watch out, 2 weeks from now you're going to be filming it.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And putting it up 2 days later with full editing control.
There you go.
So are you saying I can't say anything stupid during a commercial break because we'll be filming it?
Oh, you can say anything you want, Jay. That's
why I usually do. That's the whole thing. Which is usually something stupid.
Should be fun. I think it'll be really cool. Somebody had suggested, I can't remember who it was. Maybe it might have been Travis, the polemicist, suggested that we film an episode.
Does Travis know there's a reason we're on radio?
Dave, I hope you're going to put your baseball cap in the dishwasher for that event.
Well, it's too late for that one.
No, this hat is done. This hat is this is the golf hat that I wear to UFO, not to any of the swanky joints in this town.
Right.
Let's go to the phones. 514-790-0990. It's George in God's country. Good evening, George.
If you could read my love, what I tell my thoughts could tell.
Look at
just
you.
Keeping up with that Gordon Lightfoot theme.
Bringing in the Lightfoot. Congratulations on tweeting in the correct answer and winning In the Rock Hall, the Bedini Band CD.
Wow, thank you so much. You know what? I'm going to have to find a spot for that CD, obviously, right?
It's really good, man. You're gonna like it a lot.
Well, actually, it's funny because I was just tuning into the show and I was listening to the music and I heard your interview with Dave Bedini. And I didn't even know the name of the track, but I figured it was something popcorn, so I basically found that tune and downloaded it. And here I am, I'm a winner of that CD, it's amazing.
Oh, that's cool. That's neat that you went, and I like that song a lot, I thought it was really cool. There's, it got me right away with the homage to Brown Sugar. He says, you should have heard me just around midnight.
I was the funny thing is also that it seems like I'm on a lucky streak now because like last
yeah I heard Friday, you won some Habs tickets, eh?
Yeah, I won some Habs tickets and hopefully you know my skill testing answer will be correct. You know, like minus 25 plus 15 and that kind of thing.
Now you won this through Palm, right?
Well, yeah, I did. Actually, right. It's associated with the Montreal Canadiens, and it's on their website. So you go on and you enter some kind of pin after you find it on your toast bread. And for some strange reason, I'm driving down the street, and I get this phone call and say, who the hell is this? And I answered it, and she says, congratulations, you won two tickets. And I said, oh, my God.
So you're going to go, right, George?
Well, I never look a gift horse in the mouth. Of course I'm going to do that.
Good
I'm not going to decline these tickets. Come on. A lot of these, you know, nasty Habs fans out there are telling me to decline tickets. Come on.
No.
But I'm so happy that the theme of the contest that I won, actually, the CD, was Italian-American players. Who have
yes,
the
Greek-Canadian answering the question about Italian-Americans, right?
No, but I was I've told you this before. I was at Shea Stadium August 21st, 2001, when Mike Piazza hit his 300th career home run as a catcher against the Colorado Rockies. So there you got it.
Pretty cool. Piazza was the first foul ball I ever caught at the Olympic Stadium was a Mike Piazza foul ball.
Here's a question for you guys.
Him and Vladdy, two in the same summer and none
nice.
Outside of that.
Who is the Greek American who has the most home runs in Major League Baseball?
Greek American.
Yeah, I was going through that list and I was trying to figure out who it was, and I think I've got the correct answer because only I would know this, of course.
Enlighten us.
Tino Martinez with 339 home runs. Okay, his mother is half Greek. If you check it out, so that sort of like qualifies.
Okay, so this is like Ted Williams is the greatest Latino hitter of all time, right?
To hang on to. Actually, there have been some famous...
You've got Nick Markakis to hang on to.
Well, there was also a lot of other people that were of Greek origin who were involved in baseball. Like
you've got Alexander the Great to hang on to, for crying out loud.
Well, I'll tell you, another thing, now that you mentioned Alexander the Great, I was considering that we should put the big O as one of the wonders of the world. Because I wonder how the thing is still standing.
Yeah, I was just waiting for the punchline on that one. Like, who in their right mind would think of the Olympic Stadium as one of the wonders of the world?
Well, I wonder how it's still standing. And you know what I was thinking? I didn't even know about this, but then I look at the Gazette this morning, and I see front page, of course, is a big picture of the Big O.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thought that came to mind was, like, flashback of when that concrete...
91.
Thing, yeah. Fell and they had to go on the road for 30 days. And I said to myself, even if we had a Major League Baseball here in Montreal, how could we possibly be playing at the Olympic Stadium?
We wouldn't be. And that's what it comes down to, George, which is why all the conversations about bringing a baseball team back right now are not realistic. The stadium needs to be built first. There are a lot of things that need to be done. Jay, did you win?
No, okay. I can't even do the damn thing.
I'm sitting here watching Jay roll up the rim to win while I'm talking to you.
I hope you win the free donut at least.
That's the last thing I need right now, believe me.
Well, I can say the same, believe me. I need to go on a diet immediately.
George, I'm going to be announcing my suggestion for the Gary Carter.
I heard that.
And I hope that you, when it's released, you'll get behind it and help us
you know what?
Drum up some support for it.
Listen, I don't don't even have to know what it is. All I know is I know Dave Kaufman, and I also know that Jay has great taste and good judgment, and I know that if he says that it's 100% foolproof plan, then I'm behind it 100%, just knowing you two guys without even knowing what the plan is.
Hopefully I'll get to share it with you in the next few days. Definitely by this time next week.
I'll be sending, Dave, I promised you a certain picture.
Yes.
I'm going to fix it up nice for you, and I'm also going to include the same picture for Jay as well so he can enjoy it.
We will, when we see it, we will talk about it. Looking forward to it.
Take care, guys. Good night.
Thank you, my friend.
Ciao.
And I do feel that way now. George is absolutely a friend now. He has been such a good friend to the show, and we really appreciate
very
it.
Very loyal, very great listener, and always something interesting to say.
That's right. A very intelligent man.
He can also, like any other Greek on this planet, sniff out even the slightest bit of Greek lineage in any person, even with a Latino name.
Tino Martinez.
Somehow, some way. He's probably his cousin.
You know what? I should have mentioned Harry Aganis.
Who?
Harry Aganis. You know that name?
That also rings a bell, but...
Boston Red Sox, back in the day. Mm-hmm. I believe that there's some sort of charity named after him. Either he had a terrible injury or passed away. Something really tragic happened. Please look it up, someone with Google here. It was Agganis, Harry Aganis. And I know that there's a memorial tournament for him now, but there's something ringing a bell about... Harry Aganis, Red Sox star. That sounds like a very Greek name to me.
Aganis?
Aganis,
it doesn't sound good. Died age 26.
There you go.
Cambridge, Massachusetts. Let's see.
Do, do, do.
Yeah,
come on, you got to be quicker on the jump here.
What can you do?
Well, we can talk.
We can talk.
This is according to Wikipedia. In 1955, Aganis was off to a good start, but on June 2nd, he was hospitalized with pneumonia after complaining of severe fever and chest pains. Though he rejoined the Red Sox 10 days later, he fell ill again in Kansas City on June 27th and was flown back to Cambridge, Massachusetts, where he died of a pulmonary embolism.
Wow.
10,000 mourners attended his wake.
There you go. And he was an up-and-coming Red Sox star.
He was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1974.
Wow.
So obviously a very talented athlete.
There you go. I don't have...
Harry Aganis.
Harry Aganis. There you go. Travis Nelson, the polemicist, piping in for reference. I'm still chuckling at, I swear, Musial was Italian.
Yeah, that's great.
That was pretty good, eh?
That was a reach. Why
not?
Why,
hey, if Tino Martinez can be a quarter Greek, then Stan Musial could have been an eighth Italian.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me laugh.
Where's Joe Pepitone on that list?
He is Greek. For sure he is Greek. You are Greek, no? Yeah, it's just automatic. I love it.
So today was a momentous day in sports with Patrick Burke. I just changed the tone on that, and I hope you don't mind, Jay. But,
no, let's go for it, man. We've been wanting to talk about this. Let's do it.
We're running out of time on the show, and sure. This is so important to me. Thank God my parents were, still are, socially aware and cognizant of their surroundings, and that they instilled the desire to seek out social justice in both of their children. Because it's insane what's going on right now. And we saw a tweet today, Jay. We both lost it. Not 30 minutes after Patrick Burke speaks on Melnick in the Afternoon, a Twitter account claiming to be Blue Jays second baseman Kelly Johnson makes a gay slur. Right away, you and I jump on it on Twitter. And within seconds, Ricky Romero tweets out that it's a fake account and that Jays security is on it. It was highly fishy.
The Jays have some sort of security?
Yeah, they're doing such a great job with Brett Laurie's Twitter account.
Yeah. What do they have? A bunch of guys in suits in the control room, and they're all standing around going, oh, we got a live one.
No, but you got to do it like Edward G. Robinson.
Ah, we got a live one here, Shay.
So within minutes, the tweet is taken down. And then minutes after that, the Twitter account is suddenly called fake Kelly 2B or whatever it was. Whole thing stinks to high hell, Jay.
I smell a rat. Listen, we can't assume that it was him.
Nope.
We can't. But it didn't look good. It didn't look good, first of all, because he had 800 followers and he had a very low amount of tweets. I don't know how
two.
Many. Two tweets.
Jay, it was the second tweet that he sent out was something about being gay at the end of it. Or, sorry, that makes me sound gay.
No, I don't want to look gay. That's what he said.
That was it.
He said, he referred to touching somebody's butt, and if it's a guy, he doesn't want to look gay or something like that.
Right.
Something extremely stupid. Now, you have two tweets. You have 800 followers. You have two tweets. You're supposedly a fake account. If you're a fake account, why do you only have two tweets? The whole idea of having a fake account is to be funny, is to tweet out. And first of all, that wasn't funny at all. But second of all, if you're going to have a whole bunch of tweets, yeah, I mean, if you're going to have a low amount of tweets, then you're obviously not a fake account because you're trying to prove something by being a fake account.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, this guy's not exactly a superstar either. I mean, he only has 800 followers.
Well, no, but he'd had zero followers at the start of the day. The point is that it grew at some point.
Okay.
Which means that probably one of the Blue Jays said, hey, follow my buddy Kelly Johnson, who's now on Twitter.
Okay, so he only came on at the beginning of the day.
His first tweet ever released was today.
And his second just nailed it.
The first one was, I'm on Twitter, I need more followers. And the second one was, gee, when you touch someone's butt, if it's a guy, it makes you look gay or something. I mean, it was stupid. It was idiotic, but the timing of it couldn't have been worse. And my reaction was to tweet at Romero and say, hey, tell this guy about the @youcanplay account on Twitter, and then hashtagged it Team Unit.
Yes. Tell this guy to please reach the age of reason. How about that? Well, tell this guy to wake up a little bit.
It's sad, but people damn well better wake up. Patrick Burke said within 2 years, there will be an openly gay hockey player. You know what upset me in the last 24 hours? Since seeing the PSA and this wonderful campaign and watching its Twitter feed grow from less followers than me to several thousand, I haven't heard one thing from the Montreal Canadiens yet. Not one Hab has stood up yet and said, we stand with these guys. I know they practiced this morning. There could have been an opportunity for that audio. I'm dead serious, Jay.
Yeah,
it really upset me.
They got nothing else to do.
Montreal is such a tolerant city. We talked about that when we had our show with Bugs Burnett, and we talked about exactly this a few weeks ago. And I argued that this is the year for it to happen and how wonderful it would be if a Montreal Canadian was openly gay and came out of the closet this season. Because suddenly this wouldn't be the year that the Habs finished in last place. It would be the year that someone broke the barrier.
It would be great if it was one of our guys.
Yeah.
It put the spotlight on what has otherwise been a dismal season.
And he would be embraced. He would be embraced in this town.
Especially in this town. Absolutely.
There's a lot of towns. New York. And I think Toronto, he'd be fine.
Yeah. But it would be nice. It would put...
Yeah, I know there's 27 other cities. Miami, I'd imagine a player would be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, San Jose.
San Francisco.
Yeah.
There are cities where it would be more accepted. There's a reason that Branch Rickey wanted Jackie Robinson to start it in Montreal.
Well, yeah, because there's a tolerance level here, which is funny. There are certain issues in which some of the population has absolutely no tolerance for.
Right.
Yet we're known as a very liberal, left-leaning, tolerant city.
Laissez-faire.
Laissez-faire. Laissez-faire.
And laissez les bon temps rouler.
That too. That's for sure.
Sean, have you, you spent so much time in locker rooms. Do you think that it's going to happen soon, or do you think that it's such the machismo prevents it?
Well, I think that what the Burks are doing, this initiative, is definitely something that makes it that much more possible, more plausible that a player would feel that the environment exists where they could openly acknowledge their sexuality if they chose.
I'm hoping it's more than one. I'm hoping that there's a press conference with a couple of guys or a few guys so that one guy doesn't have to face this on his own. And honestly, if you're a gay hockey player, and like we discussed, numbers-wise, there's 2.5, there's 2.3 on every team, right? If there's 23 guys on the team, then there's 2.3. It's at least 10% minimum. I'd imagine that one will open the floodgates, and it will make it easier for two, and then three, and then four. You know, Jackie Robinson started alone. Larry Doby was hot on his heels.
Yes, he was. He was the first in the American League.
That's right.
Larry Doby. And the Phillies. Was it the Phillies? No, that had a chance, but they passed it up. Anyway, it's not important.
The Red Sox had a chance for Willie Mays and passed it up. And it turned out that the Red Sox were the last team.
Right.
Pumpsy Green in 1959.
There you go.
Tragedy.
1959.
59. Robinson breaks the barrier in 47.
As if 47 wasn't late enough.
12 years for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah. Now, only time will tell. It'll only be in retrospect when we're looking maybe 20 or 30 years from now, when the time comes that a gay player does come out, whether it was too late or not. Because many say, and many are right when they say, that Jackie Robinson's time came way too late.
Of course.
So we'll only be able to tell after time whether the same thing happens for a gay player to come out. It'll be very, very interesting to see how this would go down in history. And I believe that hockey will be the first one, because hockey, the politics in hockey seem to be a little more left-leaning, maybe because the sport is predominantly Canadian. There are a lot of Canadians in the sport, and Canadians are known for their leftist-leaning views, a little bit of socialism here and there. And
I'd like to thank our guests Don Cherry and Stephen Harper.
Yeah. well, that's why everybody's pissed off at Don Cherry all the time. We're nice people. What do you want? We're nice people, and we're open-minded people, and we don't want to upset anybody. And I think NHL should lead the way, and I think they will, actually.
I want to thank Jimmy G on the board and John Kakalakis for doing a wonderful job editing up a storm. Show will be online very soon at thekaufmanshow.podbean.com and on iTunes. Sean Farrell, you have a good time?
A great time, Dave. It was a pleasure being here.
Good. Thank you. Please join
Thanks
us again.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
Wonderful to have your trivia. I want to thank Dave Bedini. What a great effing guest. Steve Patterson. Follow him on Twitter at Patterballs.
The Bathhouse Wanderer.
Great fun tonight. Thank you all for listening. Jay, thumbs up. Like Don Cherry, man. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. He's a good guy, eh?
Hey.
Like a good looking. Looks like a hockey player.
You can play. Kaufman Show stands with you. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand. Hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping and picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand. Davy and me, face down in our suit,
some French restaurant. I saw Riviera de Loup last night at the tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman. You've been listening to The Kaufman Show, and we'll see you next Monday.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?